Good evening, everyone. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of yesterday, May 2nd, in front of us. Are there any corrections, additions, or changes to the minutes? Representative Hamilton moves approval of the minutes. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have three bills this evening. First, House File 514 on the lottery, second, 874 on HAVA, and thirdly, the Omnibus Environment Bill. And we'll start by recognizing Representative Westerberg. Representative Westerberg, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. The Chair will move that House File 514 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Westerberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We do have a technical amendment in your packets, too, that I would like to have moved to get the bill in the shape that I would like.
And is that the A1 amendment?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Chair moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? I believe it's a technical amendment. All in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Westerberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As far as this bill goes, and if you're being considerate of your time, do you want the 30-second version?
Yes.
This is a bill that I think everybody's pretty familiar with. It's really technical in nature. Article 1 provides for a lottery board. This is at the recommendation of the task force that was organized to study the lottery and make recommendations. And Article 2 provides for a director of card clubs at Canterbury. And members, just to address the amendment too, just briefly, that technical amendment, all it did was it stipulated where the costs come from on paying for the card club director out of the fees that are collected from the card club through the Racino. And with that, Mr. Chair and members, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Westerberg, page 5, this director of card clubs. The commission shall employ a director of card clubs who serves in the unclassified service at the commission's pleasure. And then later on it says this person should be have an expert knowledge and training in matters relevant to the operation of a card club. And as one who's always looking to some way to improve his high five, is this an appointed position or is it civil service?
I thought, Representative Huntley, that it was merit that we had these cards laid out and the best person got the job.
Well, Mr. Chair, a couple of years ago we eliminated the best two jobs in state government.
And those were?
The boxing commissioner and the hotel inspector.
Oh, all right.
Nothing to aspire to except maybe being director of card club.
Representative Westerberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley. The position is going to be filled by the commissioner of racing, and I'm not sure, is Mr. Kruger here? I don't see him in here in the audience, I guess, right at the moment. But it's designed to be filled by the commissioner of racing, Dick Kruger's, and his outfit. And if you want to submit your application, you know, I wish you the best of luck.
Other questions or discussion on the bill? Seeing no further discussion, Chair renews his motion that House File 514, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Westerberg. Next bill is House File 874. Chair moves that House File 874 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Broad, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And Mr. Chair, essentially this is pretty much the same bill that you already passed through within the state government finance bill with a few amendments that I believe Representative Hilty has to make sure that it aligns with that bill as well.
Okay, is Representative Hilty here? Okay, if you know where he is, maybe we can get him. Were all three of these Representative Hilty's amendments?
Mr. Chair, actually, I would be happy to incorporate those amendments, and maybe we could quickly discuss them. But there is the A11, the A12, and the A14 amendments.
Okay. Well, I guess I don't want to incorporate them in the bill, given the bill has already traveled through several other committees. I would want to vote on that. Is there one you'd like to take first, Representative Broad?
Mr. Chair, we could certainly take the A11 amendment first. That would be fine. And that essentially will put the bill into the same fashion that was passed through your committee previously.
Okay. I think I'd be comfortable moving that. Chair will move the A11 amendment. Is there a discussion to the A11 amendment? Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Brown, why was this removed if this was in here when it went through here before?
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, essentially it wasn't removed. We're adding it to this bill. So we added it to the state government finance bill. So we're just aligning the two bills.
Thank you.
Mr. Kolkutsky.
Mr. Chair and members, the three bills that Representative Broad has in front of you are the amendments that Representative Hilty amended on to the state government finance bill, with the exception of the one amendment, the A14 amendment, where he makes a, if you can recall back to the Ways and Means Committee on State Government Finance, that we called down the Hennepin County folks to talk about that position of the bill. And what this is if they take out one sentence from the amendment that Representative Hilty offered on that A14, which was the transmission must not be made using the precinct counting or recording device, but must be made independently of that device.
Okay, let's wait to discuss that one since that amendment's coming up. Representative Hilty, we've just moved the A11 amendment, which I understand will help conform House File 874 to what we did in the state government finance bill. Do you have any other comments on the A11 amendment?
I might have as soon as I find it, Mr. Chair.
All right. We'll give you a minute.
Oh, Mr. Chair, the A11 is identical to the one that we put on the version of the bill on the State Government Finance Committee, the State Government Finance Bill, and simply allows the Secretary of State to help in the redistribution of used polling equipment.
All right. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll address this to Representative Broad, and that is on line 7. It says the equipment being replaced, if any, available. What does that mean? Would you explain that, please?
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dempsey, essentially this is just saying that if there is available equipment after new equipment is purchased, then somebody else can actually actually choose to use this equipment. So it's essentially a recycling program for voting equipment.
You know, members, now that I'm looking at this amendment again, I remember this amendment actually had some controversy in this committee before. We might want to talk about this one a little bit more. This was the one where, as I recall, there was some question as to whether people felt we should essentially make the counties give away voting equipment they had purchased, perhaps with their own dollars, to someone else for free in exchange for getting this other voting equipment. I guess that's my recollection of the discussion anyway. Representative Hilty, would you like to speak to that issue a little bit more? Is my recollection on that correct?
I believe it is, Mr. Chair. That question did arise. I think Mr. Black from the Secretary of State's office addressed it, but basically what we're talking about here is that there is funding in the HAVA account, federal funds, to cover any new equipment that any county or any jurisdiction chooses to to add to meet the requirements of the bill. A lot of counties are not going to do that. I had a conversation this morning with the elections official from Hennepin County who said that they didn't anticipate, except for the assisted voting equipment, didn't anticipate changing any of their equipment because there are a lot of complications involved in doing that. Some counties, however, will be upgrading equipment, and that will be covered by the HAVA account.
Well, tell you what, Representative Hilty, before we get too deep into this one, I'm going to withdraw the amendment since it was my motion. Let's go on to the A-12 amendment, and we can go back to the A-11 discussion. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, it may be a very simple fix here that we could change must to may, and that may solve the problem, maybe not. So it's up to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well, I've already withdrawn it, so we'll go back to that one in a minute. We have the A-12 amendment before us. I believe, Representative Hilty, that this was one you said we had also added on in its entirety in state government?
That's correct, Mr.
And
Chair.
And would you like to move the A-12
amendment?
Representative Hilty moves the A-12 amendment.
What this amendment does, Mr. Chair, is just make it possible for the Office of the Secretary of State to receive federal funds that are available to be distributed as grants to jurisdictions for the upgrade of their polling place to accommodate disabled voters.
Okay. Representative Garland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, will, or Mr. Kilpuski or Representative Brad, will there be any gap in service? Because it's we're counting on these funds, it looks like, being secured. But it just says the Secretary of State is authorized to apply for them, and then it nullifies the current appropriation. But I'm wondering if there's any possibility of not getting the funds or needing the funds before we get them.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Kokutsky.
Representative Riley. Tony Kokutsky, Deputy Secretary of State. These funds are coming out of a special area. It's coming out of Health and Human Services of the federal government. Last year we received about $200,000 for the last election cycle. Funds are there already. It's just that we have to put the application so we can get the money here. But we needed to have authorization before we can put the application in to distribute the funds to the local townships and cities that apply for them. It's a special grant program. And we used it last time, and it went from little simple things like putting maybe in a special door opener to putting in a ramp to dealing with those kind of issues. So it's coming out of Health and Human Services, the federal government. It's not part of HAVA. It's related but not part of.
Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kielpuski. So, in other words, there's no problem. There's enough money that everyone can get it. It's not first come, first serve.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Filing, actually, you need to apply and you have to demonstrate the need. And what they try to do with that is take a look at all the applications and divide the money out as much as they can. Because if you get $200,000 and you have 4,000 polling places applying for that, if they needed it, it would be a pretty small amount of money going. So what they do is they take a look at handicap accessibility. There's a survey that they take, an application form they go through, and it's pulled out based on the need.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My last question, and I'm just pursuing this because I have a person who I know who's got MS, and she really counts on voting, and she does need some assistance. It just concerns me that it sounds like we are, notwithstanding provisions in laws 2003 and so forth, that we're counting on these funds, and therefore we're getting rid of the other requirement, and that just concerns me if there's not enough, we're not sure we're getting it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Riding, the money will be there. It's just that we need the authorization. And the funding is actually different than it was last time because the last act only gave us the authority to do it for that limited election cycle. Now we need it for the next election cycle to give us the authority to do this.
Okay.
Other discussion to the A-12 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A-12 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A-12 amendment is adopted. Next we have let's take up the A-14 amendment. Representative Hilty moves the A-14 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty, we talked about this a little bit, but why don't you tell us a little bit more about it, especially given that I think this one is slightly different than what we adopted to the state government finance bill before?
It is, Mr. Chair, in a very minor way. What the amendment is intended to accomplish, again, this was brought by the Secretary of State. The language in the amendment is necessary because there's currently on the market a new piece of equipment that is different than what was contemplated when the original bill was drafted. It's a piece of equipment that would function by being device that assists disabled voters, and it would function by being hardwired to the precinct tabulator rather than generating a separate ballot. Language in the amendment provides that it must generate something that's comparable to a discrete paper ballot, a paper marker. But the language in the original bill needed to be altered to accommodate this sort of system. It's not clear that anybody is going to adopt this system, but that's what the language does. There was some question because once this the question of connecting devices arose, I wanted to make sure that any other connections that might be possible were proscribed, because we don't want to end up with a system that allows for the possibility of being hacked into or manipulated in some way.
Okay.
Or that would cause a more catastrophic failure if one device failed. So that's a matter of security. Then the question arose in the part of Hennepin County about the reporting requirement in here, the prohibition, because they do transmit results via wireless technology to their central tabulating center after the polls close. We just had to change the wording in here to make it clear that while those kinds of connections are prohibited during polling hours, they are permitted once the polls have closed. That satisfied Hennepin County's concerns. The language that we incorporated into the amendment was suggested by the Hennepin County elections official. I met with him this morning. He looked at the amendment. We had a nice conversation, and he's perfectly happy with how this is drafted.
And Representative Broad, as the author of the bill, are you supportive of this amendment?
Mr. Chair, absolutely. I think Representative Hilty is intending to firm up the security of the system as well as the integrity of the process. I would encourage members to vote for this amendment. The counties are supporting it.
Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I raised concerns about this amendment originally in the State Department's bill, and I want to thank Representative Broad and Representative Hilty for really working with the election official from Hennepin County, David Medea, because there were concerns about this after all, and I think this takes care of that concern about transmitting after the polls close, which is the practice that they use right now. And I think both Hennepin and Scott County would have a concern if we had used the original language. So I want to thank them for working very hard. We had been going through a series of emails back and forth, and then Representative Hilty did a great job meeting with him today, and I want to thank you for that and taking care of the concern.
Okay, other discussion to the A14 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A14 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay, finally we have the A11 amendment back. Representative Hilty, would you like to move the A11 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would so move.
Okay, Representative Hilty moves the A11 amendment. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, if we're going to turn this to May, then we really don't even need it. They can do it now. They can either give it to somebody or sell it to somebody. So I don't know why. You know, I mean, Representative Broad said turn it to a May. Well, then let's just drop it.
We could, if you, Representative Broad, when you were turning it to a may, were you looking at page 1, line 6, turn the must to the may, and also on line 11, turn the must to the may?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was. But, Mr. Chair, before we go there, maybe Deputy Secretary Kilkutsky has a comment.
Okay, Mr. Kilkutsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think if you take a look at the purpose behind this, is that we have one goal in mind, and that is to try to help the voters in this state to do three things: to vote privately and independently, and to be able to check theirs as we go down the line. HABA, the federal government's, they're portioning out money for us to do that in terms of getting the privacy and independency and independent voting that's going on in the state. Detecting errors is also going to be out there. So money's going to be distributed to everybody to get those machines out there. However, there are some counties that will have precinct counters available if they use different options to get to that. And so that their new machines are going to be replaced with federal money. Now, members, if you take a look across the state, the greatest area of need is going to be primarily outside the 11-county metro area and the regional centers across the state. What this was attempting to do was to make more precinct optical scan equipment available, if possible, you know, if they're going to choose that option, out there to the rest of the state. It's kind of like if you're selling a car to your brother. Usually you try to give them a better deal. If it's your brother, you might even give it to him, unless you don't really like your brother. And so we're kind of trying to take a look at trying to get equipment out to other people. The other thing that the amendment is trying to do is to have the Secretary of State's website be a clearinghouse for this, where people could also, from those counties or those townships or those areas, contact folks to find out where that equipment is. And since the replacement equipment is being paid for with federal dollars, we thought it would be okay to make the equipment available.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, if we could, Kevin Corbett from Washington County Elections is also here, and he may have a comment on this as well.
Okay, Mr. Corbett. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Corbett. Could you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kevin Corbett, the Director of Assessment, Taxpayer Service and Elections in Washington County. Certainly the county associations have looked at this amendment, and we don't think it does any harm. Clearly, the first round of equipment was paid with local money, and so I certainly understand Representative Holberg's and others' concerns. One caution I would give, though, is that it's very likely that if counties replace their old equipment, it's not going to be very useful to other counties either. So it's possible this might be a help to some. I don't think it's likely, but again, it doesn't do any harm. So if it's included, there's no objection to it.
Well, Mr. Corbett, if they're replacing old equipment with new HABA equipment, I mean, why would they be replacing it unless it didn't meet some sort of HABA standard?
Mr. Chair and committee members, Washington County is a good example of where this might come into place. Right now, Washington County uses a precinct counter that is developed by a company called Diebold Elections. Right now, one of the options for an assisted voting piece of equipment is manufactured by a company called ES&S, the Automark machine. It is very likely that that Automark machine will not operate with a Diebold precinct counter. If the Automark becomes the only available option for a county like Washington for its assisted voting solution, we will most likely have to replace our current precinct counters with the precinct counters from a different vendor, so we have two pieces of equipment that work together. In that case, we would have equipment that has some useful life left in it. The question is, would any county that's starting from scratch choose to take a used Diebold equipment and try to make it work with something else? I don't think so. That's why my comment was, I don't think this is very practical, but it certainly may become an option for folks.
Representative Smith, then Hilty. Oh,
Mr. Chairman, a question for the Deputy Secretary of State. Question on lines, language on 8 through 10. If the equipment that is being replaced is suitable to be kept in use and is being made available for transfer, Why is it being limited to counties that don't have that type of equipment already? If they want to have such a model, why couldn't they have it?
Deputy Kokutsky. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, the purpose is to try to get the optical scan precinct ballot counters out throughout the state because it gives them the ability to detect error. And the reason we worded it that way was to try to empower voters that don't have that technology yet, where the others already have that technology. And so we're trying to take care of the greatest need first. And that's why we are worded it that way in the bill.
Thank you.
Representative Hilty.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Representative Diskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if we're going to vote on this, I want to reflect back to a comment Representative Dempsey made on line 7 asking what does that mean, and I'd have to concur, and when visiting some people here, it's a poorly written sentence, so Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a small oral amendment if I could.
State your oral amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 1, line 7, strike the word the and insert the word any. And then strike comma, if any, comma.
Representative Hilty.
That's my suggestion, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to incorporate that.
Okay. Representative Hilty incorporates that change into the amendment. Does the clerk have that change? Does council have that change? Okay. Any questions on that? Representative Larson.
Not on that change, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Then that's incorporated. To the incorporation, Representative Carlson?
I just thought that maybe the record should show that that suggestion is made by the Chair of the Education Committee.
All right.
Even though he was a master.
Oh, okay. He is multifunctional. Representative Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just think that I would agree with Representative Holberg that perhaps... if a machine isn't that old and taxpayers in a particular county have made an investment that they're now seeing that they have to make an additional investment for new equipment, it seems reasonable to at least allow them the opportunity to spread some of the costs out in terms of when they pass that used equipment on. They may choose to pass it on at no charge to another county, but I think it's reasonable for those folks to be able to recover some of their costs. And so I agree that it's probably not necessary to have the amendment since they could probably sell it at, under current law. But I think that it's reasonable to allow local units of government to recover some of those costs.
I should say, Representative Larson, there is a second part to the amendment on lines 13 through 19 that if you change the two must to mays that were being discussed would still be something that probably you'd need the amendment for if you agreed with that part of it. But Representative Hilty.
Well, Mr. Chair, to Representative Larson's point, I just wanted to point out that any equipment that's being replaced will not be at the taxpayer's expense, at least not directly. This will be from the federal HABA funds, not from local funds.
Representative Larson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, it's not the new equipment that I'm talking about. It's the investment in the old equipment, and so at least the taxpayers in one county will have an investment in it. And I don't even know what amount of money we're talking about here, but it just seems that they ought to let the free market work in this area.
Representative Beard.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Chair, to that point, I think that under this section, the municipality will be getting free of charge new stuff. So they're actually having their systems upgraded, so I think it's a very reasonable amendment. I'd speak in favor of the amendment because it strikes me as reasonable, then we pass it down. The benefit that accrued to a county upgrading their equipment should be passed on. I don't have any problem with that at all. In fact, I think it's good policy.
Well, members, as I'm looking at it, I think just to get us moving along here, I'm going to make an oral amendment. Page 1, line 6, strike must, insert may. Page 1, line 11, strike must, insert may. I would make that oral amendment. Discussion to the oral amendment. See no discussion. All in favor of the oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. Okay. Any other discussion to the A11 amendment as amended? See no further discussion. All in favor of the A11 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A11 amendment is adopted. Okay, we have, are there any other amendments? Discussion to the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to have you take out your fiscal note, if you would please, that's associated with this. And a couple of things on it. If you look on page 6 of the fiscal note, I need to have a little bit of explanation. My understanding is we're appropriating $5 million in this, and I think it's federal funds of the money. And as if you look on page 6 of 8 of your fiscal note, in the operating costs, the total in 06 of 3,687, in 07 of 1,097, and then capital cost of 60. Just about the $5 million. But I want you to look on line 17. It says polling place equipment, $6 million, with an asterisk of that. Only $96,000 is covered by this appropriation. I want you to turn back, if you would please, to page 4 of the bill. And the very last sentence on page 4 says, and it's talking about this equipment in lines 12 through 14 on page 6. That's the, as I understand it, that's the equipment that goes out, or operating equipment. But it says the remaining expenses will be needed to address at a future date. So it appears that the $6 million that's not in bold and is asterisked, or the majority of that, is going to have to be addressed at a future date. I need to have a little explanation of what kind of a tail, where the funds may be coming from, what the expectation, what it's going to be used for.
Mr. Black, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please give us your name for the record and your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I am Bert Black, Business and Legal Analyst for the Office of the Secretary of State. And to respond to Representative Solberg's question, the $6 million that's listed here is not for voting machines. There is $6 million in the bill for voting machines. That's a coincidental number, but a different purpose entirely. This $6 million...
Just interrupt, Mr. Black. Is that the $6 million that right, we find on page 4 of the bill, subdivision 2, line 24?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, that $6 million is a separate appropriation. That's a different issue than what the one you're addressing.
And but that's, Mr. Chair, Mr. Black, that's the money that goes to the counties. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, that is correct. That is for additional precinct optical scan equipment. So we're not talking about voting machine systems here. What we're talking about is the equipment and the equipment packet necessary for streamlined election day voter registration, voter verification, which is required under HAVA. We had a record 500,000 election day registrations in this state. In order to develop a system which will actually take care of that on election day, which arguably is what HAVA required, and because we're an election day registration state, HAVA is not written for election day registration states. We've had to work our way through HAVA and figure it out. Pretty much outside of the paradigm. What this equipment is for is to automate the actual process when you go to the polling place, when you sign in, when you register at the polling place. We're talking about, as I said, over 500,000 Election Day registrations. In Hennepin County, it took them about 2.5 months of additional overtime work to actually enter the voter history for not only the voters, but then also to enter the Election Day registrations. I will direct your attention. This $5 million that is appropriated is for it's federal money. The money does not, it's what they call zero-year money. It does not expire. The appropriation is for the entire bill is until 2009. And if you will look across on lines 1 through 9 of the chart, those are the items that are absolutely required under the Help America Vote Act. And if you read across there, that comes up to slightly in excess of $4 million, just lines 1 through 9, for fiscal year 6, 7, and then the 8-9 biennium. The 8-9 biennium is somewhat smaller because we've invested some capital or some development costs and some capital costs up front. Items 10 and 11 are not strictly required by HAVA, but they are effectively required because we have to train local election officials. And there's a learning curve as we get into this whole process with the new machines. And, of course, voter education so that the voters know how to use the new machines as well. Finally, you get down to lines 12 through 16. And, Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, the $6 million, that's the developmental costs. The $6 million is about $1,500 per precinct. And it involves, for example, a signature pad, a laptop, a swiping card reader. Those are the kinds of equipment that we're talking about in the $6 million. And I hope that's responsive to your question.
No,
Representative Solberg
confused me more.
My apologies.
Lines 12 through 16?
On the chart.
On the chart. Does that add up to $6 million?
No, that's actually, Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, that's actually a separate group of expenses. We've actually identified, although we're not requesting it, we've identified $10.9 million of HAVA-related expenses, and we wanted to give the committee and the members a full idea of what the costs are, but lines 1 through 9 are the priorities.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I understand that. So, in effect, Mr. Black, if you take the black, I guess that's a pun, the bold numbers on that sheet, that roughly adds up to the $5 million that's appropriated. Is that correct?
That, Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, that is correct.
But for the total biennium in the you've got 10.9, and we have $6 million that, according to the thing on page 4, says the remaining expenses will be needed to address at a future date. That's the sentence I'm trying to get at. What is the intent of the Secretary of State to address it? Is it federal funds? If federal funds aren't available, it's a state obligation.
Mr. Black.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, that's why I indicated that 1 through 9 are the initial priority, and if you read them across, this is what we estimate these costs to be for 4 years, which is the duration of the appropriation. If there are funds remaining from those priorities, and then also from 10 and 11, we would like to commence the development of lines 12 through 16. You are correct, Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, you are correct that the $6 million is at this point, it is unlikely that we will receive further federal funding to cover that. If a jurisdiction should choose to invest in that packet, and whether that jurisdiction is the state with state money or a local unit of government, and perhaps they will have equipment that they can plug right in that they can use without any outlay. But what we essentially require in order to implement this automation in the polling place to reduce the lines is a laptop, a signature pad, and a card swiper. And there are a couple of other minor things, but those are the major ones. It may be that they will have some of those on hand. Certainly there are plenty of laptops in use in local government. If they meet certain requirements, that takes a tremendous amount out. That number of $6 million is what it would cost if we have to buy all those things new for 4,000 precincts.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, this is something that I know Representative Hilty is the expert on this, and I don't intend to even go down this road. But I guess in a fiscal note like this, when we see that the obligation is 10.9, and we have, my understanding is that the bowl is a federal money, and that's in hand, about $5 million. Plus the $6 million that's going out for the county equipment. How much of that line 17 is equipment that would have to be within the Secretary of State's office?
Mr. Black.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, zero. Or nearly zero, I should say. Never say never. Nearly zero. This is all precinct-based equipment.
So, Mr. Chairman, the obvious question is, what if that doesn't come through in the federal government? Would you be seeking the funds from the state? If the state said no, what do we do?
Mr. Black.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, we are not seeking it at this time. That may be in the wrong column. It may be that should be in amounts that we would seek from someone, not necessarily the state. It might be local participation at a future time, because it will take some time to develop these automated systems, the infrastructure for the automated systems, and we are only going to do that if we have the funds available after doing lines 1 through 9, 10, and 11.
Mr. Chairman, I guess
Representative
I visited very, very briefly with Representative Hilty on this, and if he's comfortable with that explanation, it makes me feel comfortable. I think we have a little bit of a future obligation that may be out there we should understand, but I don't want that obligation to come down and then all of a sudden from the Secretary of State to tell each of the local polling places that you have to purchase this equipment and do the software because of same-day voter registration. When they say seek them from other sources, the other sources may be a mandate to my township. Mm-hmm. And I want the Representative Hilty to feel comfortable about this as well.
Mr. Black, do you have any estimate, or does the Secretary of State's office have any estimate in terms of the $6 million, how much will have to actually be real purchases, as opposed to, you talked about different counties or jurisdictions already having computers and things they can use that if they had them they wouldn't use this for?
Mr. Chairman and members, I don't have any worked up estimates, but I would suggest that there are a substantial number of precincts that are larger and that are in the metropolitan area. Those are the ones that would benefit the most from the reduction in the lines, and also the reduction in the work after Election Day. And to be perfectly honest, I don't know although I want to be careful about equal protection concerns here, which always come into play now after Bush versus Gore in the elections area, This might be done at first as a voluntary matter. I think there's a cost benefit to the county in not having to pay the clerical workers to enter for several months, as I said, that was the case in Hennepin County. So there is a cost benefit. My off the seat of the pants guess, Mr. Chair, is that probably if everybody participated, I'll guess that about half of the precincts could be supplied with at least the laptop. The other materials, I'm not sure. I don't know where local governments are at with respect to the card swiping and the signature pads.
And so if I can, just to be clear, you're saying, Mr. Black, that your estimate is maybe in the out biennium, 08-09, there's $3 million of other equipment that will need to be purchased by someone for this.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct if everybody chooses to participate. There may be many counties in which are less populated that don't see the need for it because they don't have long lines or they don't have a lot of Election Day registrations. And so it may not be economic for them. We do think there's a cost benefit to certainly the larger precincts.
Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Black, you talk a lot about, and this may be something that's already done or whatever, but we know that there's over 4,000 precincts, and we talk about computers, and I'm not sure if they're going to be required, but many, and one of the biggest questions I get when HAVA comes up in my area is from town board members who do not even have a phone line to their town hall, and so they're a little bit concerned about whether or not that is required or will need to be required after in 08 or 09, and if that's the case, does some of this federal money cover putting phone lines into, I would say 90% in my county do not have a phone line. Can you address that issue a little bit?
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd let Mr. Black respond, but I just wanted to say to Representative Otremba that not having a phone line is probably a good thing, and it would not really be required for any of this equipment to function, and a lot of the problems that we've seen across the country with voting equipment are precisely because of those kinds of connections, which the A14 Amendment, which we just adopted, precludes in Minnesota.
Mr. Black.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Otremba and members, no, I don't think a phone line would be required because we're looking at a laptop which would actually have on it a CD which would consist of the roster, would be on a CD. So you don't need a connection there for that purpose. For some county or precincts, they might want to have the phone line if they're going to participate in the full DPS real-time verification. There's also, so it's not required. No.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Representative Broad?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to quickly address Representative Solberg's concerns. When I read the fiscal note, I can understand those concerns. But I guess I just wanted to make sure that it's said that this bill in no way obligates that $6 million expenditure and does not designate how those funds, if the legislature should choose to authorize them at a later date, should be spent.
Seeing no further discussion at this time, the chair renews his motion that House File 874, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
More prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr.
Next, members, we've got House File 902, the Omnibus Environment Bill.
I'll get started. I'm
No. You need both. Oh, all right. Very good. All right, now we've got representative out. And we have one. How many minutes have we got? 11 out of 11 minutes.
Representative Osment moves that House File 902 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Osment, go ahead. I'm going to turn this over to Representative Dempsey to conduct for a little bit, and you can either go through the bill yourself or have Mr. Reinhold start going through the spreadsheet, whatever is your pleasure. Then we'll go to amendments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I believe I'd like to cover some highlights of the bill first, and then we'll go to Mr. Reinholz and the spreadsheets. This is the omnibus environmental finance bill, and is $3,007,000 below the governor in general fund spending. That's if option A. If option A is enacted, we would because we have do not have any gaming revenue. The House budget would need to be reduced by an additional $11.4 million, and that provision is also provided for in this bill. This bill has the merger of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the Office of Environmental Assistance. The solid waste management tax changes in this bill from 50% in the environmental fund and 50% in the general fund to 70% in the environmental fund, and that's to give the comfort to the counties and others that this is a merger that will be very consistent with their long-term needs as well as the needs of the state of Minnesota. We have a provision here that regarding PILT or payment in lieu of taxes. The governor's proposal was to freeze the PILT payments levels to the total amount that the bill be that would be paid in July of 2005. However, this bill will allow for the payment of PILT on recently purchased lands that the July 5 payment does not cover. The Minnesota Conservation Heritage Council is proposed in this bill that would replace the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources, a significant reform package. The school trust fund trust land management costs that are basically are also changes in the bill. Basically, these funds would be have the revenues that are created off of the sale of activities on those lands would go for the helping to raise those revenues. Ecological services is reduced in the bill. These are difficult the decisions that we made in the budget cutting. Then this is some of the impacts that we are having, negative impacts we have when you have to reduce budgets down below what you'd want to actually be at. The off-highway vehicle management provisions are in the bill, provides restitution, increases fines for wetland damage. It funds the Trail Ambassador Program and gives the commissioner discretion to designate trails in state forests. They have several different fees that have been increased in the bill, some from the governors and some from the committee that have come up. Those that have come up in other discussions are the road easement fee. It's a $2,000 fee. There are about 10 of these that are put out per year, and it's supposed to be a provision that covers recovers the cost for the inspection analysis and preparation of these of the lease terms. We have a surcharge for summer use of water, and this is a conservation measure they're trying to provide for with regard to implementation of fees. It increases the fees during the consumption of water during the summer months, trying to encourage people to hold down on their water consumption. There's an increase in watercraft fees. This is Representative Hackbar's provision. These fees have not been raised for several years, and the dollars raised from this increase would pay for additional public access work and law enforcement with regard to watercraft. The snowmobile stickers have also brought forward an increase of $15. This is by MinUSA, and they are asking for this additional money to help with regard to the Grant and Aid Trails program so we can expand or provide for adequate funding for the grooming of these trails. We also have regional water supply study that's in here, so it's Metropolitan Council to actually start taking a look at the available water supplies in the metropolitan area. to determine what we would need to be doing to make sure that we're approaching this issue long-term with some vision. And we also have the Minnesota Conservation Corps is funded at the same level as it was last year. Area 2 basin projects for flood management, continued funding for those. Those are two provisions that was not included in the governor's budget, but that the committee felt that should be included in this bill. And Representative Rukavina, I know that you've that sometimes it said that you haven't been able to get your bills in. I want you to know that we have not only heard your bill, but we included the farm-grown closed-loop biomass provision in the bill, and so looking for your support on this overall effort. The Mr. Chair, I would like to mention one other article that's in the bill. It's the Clean Water Legacy Act. As you know, this Clean Water Legacy is a provision that we're continuing to work on in the Environmental Finance Bill. I want to report that we're making some significant headway, I believe, in that overall effort. And that I think that the even though there has been some controversy on this proposal, that I'd like people to know that we are making some headway. If I could have a page, I'd like to have a handout. The we are making some significant headway on this issue. I have currently, I believe, though, that we need to focus our energies in one area and not get them spread out. This issue happens to be quite complex and can be easily misinterpreted, especially when you have a provision like you have in this particular bill, which is only part of the proposal. And it makes it very difficult to track, and it's very difficult for committees to try and deal with this issue and feel comfortable with it as it's moving forward. And we want to make sure that everyone is on board and feels comfortable with this overall progress of this act. And as we've had some issues recently raised with regard to property taxes, the letter that's currently being passed out is from the Minnesota Taxpayers League of Minnesota, which I received yesterday. And to let you know that they also at one point were uncomfortable with the property tax concerns. And they are now stating that overall they believe that the Clean Water Legacy Act has been crafted in such a way as to satisfy the need to implement the Clean Water Act without unduly burdening property owners or the future economic growth. And, Mr. Chair, because we're making such good headway on this issue in another forum, I believe it'd be wise for us to not develop any controversy in other areas. And so I would like to move, Mr. Chair, we delete Article 4 from the bill.
Okay. Representative Osmond moves that we delete Article 4, which is in your packet as the A21 amendment. A21-1, excuse me.
What is the Article 4?
Article 4 is the Clean Water Legacy language.
Okay.
Discussion to the Osmond Amendment. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Osmond, what will be the implications of this? Is this going to move somewhere else, or why would you want to eliminate this?
Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, this bill is moving in the Agriculture, Environment, and Natural Resources Finance Committee. It's undergoing hearings. We had 2 hours worth of hearings again this morning. We continue to have hearings scheduled for tomorrow, and hopefully we'll be moving that bill out yet this week. It goes to the Tax Committee and other locations. Having it in this bill was just kind of a placeholder in case things were able to move in the process, and we needed to, as we're getting into, as you realize, we may end up in a special session situation, then you're kind of looking for places to have items put in where you resolve the conflicts. But people feel uncomfortable with that, and we're not trying to do anything. We don't need it in two different forums. And so I just felt, get everyone in solid behind the good work that we're doing in the Finance Committee. We should just go ahead and remove it from this bill.
So, Representative Andevier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Eric asked a question about something else in the bill?
No, I think we should act on this amendment, and then we can go back to the rest of it.
I can win.
Any other discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the 821-1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Andevier.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Osmond, you mentioned the snowmobile fee increase, and I thought the ag bill or somewhere else I saw another fee related to snowmobiles. Is this the only thing that this proposed
to add charges or anything to snowmobiles this year?
Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Reinholz is just going to go through the spreadsheet, which may help to answer your questions specifically, and then we'll look at that. I'll look for make sure that I got a good, quality answer for you here as we go forward. Mr. Chair, could I have Mr. Reinholz go through the spreadsheet?
Okay, let's see. I had Representative Huntley and Paymar had questions, too, and then I do want to go through the spreadsheet. Representative Huntley, do you want to ask your question now or wait for the spreadsheet?
I can wait till after the spreadsheet.
Okay, Representative Paymar? Okay. All right, Mr. Reinholz, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm going to work off the packets that you were distributed on the spreadsheet, and I'll try to quickly move through and hit the highlights on the chain if you would find that package and if you wish to follow along with me. The first page of that package is general fund expenditure summary by agency. This I put together to show you where we are as compared to the targets that were given. It's outlined general fund only by option B and option A. As you can see, the option B general fund net effect is $285,881,000, which is right on the target. Option D, the indicates by agency amounts, but I'll go down to the total. The general fund net effect of option A is $274,481,000, which once again is right on the target. And I just to indicate the difference between the two targets, there is $11,400,000. If you would turn the page, the next page on the back is an indication of the revenue, summary of the revenue changes. Chairman Osmond went over the highlights on these, so I don't think that I'll hit on each one of those, but I point to you a large number of these are really shifting of dollars that where the previously funded out of the general fund are now going to be funded out of some of the fee funds, and often are net effects of zero where revenue and expenditures have shifted for equal amounts. That's why if you go down to the grand total for 06 and 07, on the bottom of that page, the net is $15,952,000 is the change. I have indicated what people have asked me to indicate fees, and I did. That is somewhat subjective, but I indicated by italics those items that I would think would come under the definition of fees that we use, and the total fees are $12,081,000 is contained in the House recommendations. I then would move to the spreadsheet summary by agency, and I'll move through the agencies and hit on the larger and more significant change in items. If you're on page one, really, of the spreadsheet, the Pollution Control Agency is the beginning of that. And as Chairman Osmond indicated...
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Representative Solberg.
Can I interrupt for a clarification? As we go through this spreadsheet, this is option B, I understand. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, you are correct. The details is option B. Option A is indicated on page 21, and I will go over the...
So, Mr. Chairman, if the Racine or gambling does not pass, there's no detail on that option. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, you're correct. The difference between the two options is indicated in Article 2 of the bill, and it's at the level of, in most cases, of an agency-wide reduction.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members,
Representative Wagenius, do you have a question to this point, too?
Just to this point, Mr. Chairman, as I have been trying to explain the option A, option B to my caucus, and it's difficult because people say, well, how much is forestry cut? I mean, that is a big question I get under option A because we haven't seen Racine. And the best I have been able to do is to hand out what was handed out to us by the agencies, and since I've gotten lots of requests for those, I just brought them, and Paige might want to hand them out, and this is what the various agencies say about what they might do under option A, since we don't have...
Okay, if we'd have a page, Dan, if you could hand those out. Thank you. All right, Mr. Reinholz.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll return to the spreadsheet. Of the Pollution Control Agency is the first agency. You'll see change items on line 17, 18, and 20 here. What is going on in the waters program, these are really related, several of them. The general fund is reduced by $5,700,000 but on line 17. But on line 20, you'll see there's an increase in the environmental fund of $19,132,000 over the biennium, which really backfills that fund and also puts additional dollars into waters program, as was emphasized by the governor. And rearranges dollars within the agency for that priority. Moving into the air program, which begins on line 3.
Representative, I have a request. I apologize for interfering. But when in columns H, I, and J, where it says base request, is that when it says base request, is that the same as base?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, yes, that is the base as is. Comes over from the governor's budget. Mr. Chairman,
okay, thank you.
Return to the spreadsheet.
Mr. Reinholz.
The air program begins on line 35. There is a change item which shows up on page 2, line 43. That is an increased appropriation of $1.3 million for the biennium. This increased appropriation is financed by increased fees on those that take permits on the air program, primarily to cover inflation in this program over the last few years. Moving into the land program on line 54, what you'll see there is several change items, really small ones that are some technical ones. But on line 67, there is a change item reducing the remediation dollars in the land program by $19,126,000 in the House recommendation, which is $4.2 million less than the governor's recommendation. And what this is the area where dollars were reprogrammed towards waters. In this budget, what the net result of this will be some delay in activity on the closed landfill program and Superfund cleanup on some items that the governor and the department recommended could be lower priority than the waters program. Moving on line 79, the multimedia program begins. You have to go over to page 3 to see any changes. As Chairman Osmond indicated, the House recommendations accept the governor's request to merge the OEA into the TCA to form a new department. These changes here indicated on lines 90 through 96 are really moving the dollars from the OEA into this budget to create the new department. In total, the entire base budget of OEA moved into this division. Moving down into the administrative support, there's one general fund cut that was accepted by the House that the governor requested of $800,000. The next agency, if you move on to page 4, would be the Office of Environmental Assistance. And as indicated on 4 and then moving on to page 5, this entire agency has their base request, the base item has moved into the PCA, which was the governor's request. On line 184, the zoo appropriations are being indicated. There's two change items here. On 194 is a $1 million reduction for the 2 years of the biennium from the general fund appropriation. On 196 is a 266 appropriation of the lottery and loo funds to the zoo. Moving into the page 6, begins the Natural Resources Department. The first program in the spreadsheet is the Land and Minerals Program. The changes begin on line 224. There are a large number of changes, and I'll hit on many of them are related, so I'll combine some of them. Throughout the DNR, there is a request that's titled Operation Support Funding, and I'll just mention it once. What has happened here is the department has requested some internal reorganization of dollars in their structure. It's moving money out of administrative support into operating programs, and those operating programs then will control those dollars, and that concept was accepted by the House. So any of those items throughout various funds titled Operation Support are really movements of money that's requested by the department. Significant items in here on line 226, the governor proposed the creation of a mineral management fee. As you see, the House recommendation adopts that, and what it does is it moves funding of much of the minerals activity off the general fund, creates a suspense account that in the net effect of that will be that those funds that earn income from the activities of the mineral division will now be paying for the operations of the minerals division pretty much in proportion to the revenue gain. That is the same concept that was applied in the forestry division a few bienniums back, creating suspense accounts so that there would be a source of stable funds for those activities within the DNR. Moving down to like 234 and 235, you'll see two items funded out of the permanent school fund. This an aggregate inventory on school trust lands and revenue enhancements on school lands. Both those were governor's recommendations adopted by the House. Both of those are intended to have revenue in excess of the appropriations as you move out a few years. They're allowing the department to find ways to raise more revenue on the trust fund lands. Moving on, the next division is the lands and minerals, the totals. Moving on to page 7 is the water resource management program division in the DNR. Change items begin on line 269. What you'll see is primarily there's part of a small general fund reduction that was proposed by the governor that the House is recommending. Operation support funding is a shifting I discussed. The water permit fee increase, now this is in the surcharge on summer water use, the governor proposed increasing fees $20 per million gallons used on summer use. Chairman Osmond mentioned that that's both a conservation item and it does raise revenue. And there also is an increase in the application fee for those permit holders that are pulling public waters for uses of irrigation and golf course watering and such. There's small appropriations related to those fee increases. Moving into the fourth man.
Representative Solberg.
You skipped 237. Can you tell me about that? Line 237.
Mr. Chairman, line 237, as Chairman Osmond indicated in his summary, the PILT payments are proposed to be reduced by $3 million in fiscal year 2007. This reduction is not a reduction in total money going out, but a freezing of the dollars at the 06 level, and that saves $3 million. It's achieved by freezing the per acre payment that the counties receive on PILT lands.
Thank you.
Going back to, I believe I was in the forest.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on the irrigation fee. Is that for agriculture land also?
Mr. Chairman, no, it is not on agricultural land. Moving back, I was on page 8, I believe, which was the Forest Management Program Division, the change items on 297. There is a general fund reduction in forestry, as indicated there. The operations support funding shift is here. There is also here trust land management cost shift, and what is happening there is funds that both expenditures and revenue that were previously in the general fund are now going to be going into the natural resources fund, so it's a net effect of zero on the general fund. It's just rearranging the sources of in the accounting of the dollars. There's an increase in the heritage enhancement appropriation to the forestry division for continuation of part of their bio plan that's inventorying a portion of the forest. The general fund open appropriation is reduced by $2.2 million, and this is there's been debt service on planes used for forest for firefighting that is ending, so there's savings to the fund. Electronic open burning permits is a small increase, $160,000. That is financed by fees on those people that choose to buy burning permits through the electronic licensing system. Moving into the park and recreation program.
Mr. Chairman, before you go too fast, how about Forest Resource Council?
Mr. Chairman, members, there is a reduction proposed in the House proposal, $426,000, to the Forest Resource Council.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Solberg.
On lines H, I, and J, as I asked before, there must have been a base in the Forest Resource Council. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Silver, yes, there is a base, and it would be included up above in the general fund number that is in the base on line 286.
Okay. I wonder I'm confused. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I was on page 9, the change items in the Parks Department. One of the 338 is just the shifting of funds that the operations support. 340 is an increase in the lottery in lieu appropriation. This increase is based on increased revenue. On 341, 343, what you see is the governor proposed making the appropriation statutory. The House decided not to accept that proposal and kept that appropriation direct. Trails and Waterways begins on 358. Change items, you'd have to go to page 10. They begin on line 372. The first one is just the support funding shift. 374 is a lottery in lieu appropriation. In this area, it's a large appropriation because it's been carried for the last several bienniums as a one-time only appropriation. It's $2.7 million. 375 is a decrease in the off-highway vehicle funding that was necessary because of the balances, declining balances in the account. 377 is a proposal, $75,000 for an ATV gas tax study. Gas ATV use in the state has increased significantly since the last gas tax study. This will now give an accurate amount for the transfer of dollars from the gas tax into the natural resources fund that is in statute. 378 is fishing piers. This is really tied to 385, and the fishing piers program is being moved out of the natural resource fund and into the game and fish fund. This was requested by the department as part of what they refer to as really the accurate place to be spending that dollars. 379 is water rec funding increase that's being proposed primarily based on balances in the water rec account. 381 indicates a grant in aid increase for the off-highway vehicle program of $300,000 over the biennium. 382 is the water access acquisition and development. Chairman Osmond indicated that was in the bill. That's a large 4.850. That is financed by the increase in boat fees. These dollars will be used both to improve and to purchase water access sites. 383 is $50,000 for a study of the North Shore Trail Master Plan up on the Lake Superior Shore. 385 is fishing pier dollars increase. 386 is merely increase in the federal dollars that comes into the Game and Fish Fund. 388 is the increased appropriation of $280,000 that the revenue is raised through an increase on the cross-country ski passes. 389, I think Chairman Osmond indicated there's in this bill there's a $15 trail sticker required for snowmobiles, expanded actually to include Minnesota registered snowmobiles. This appropriates $1 million. It will be used to purchase easements on the granting aid trail system. Moving into the Fish and Wildlife Management Programs on page 11, the change items begin. Chairman Osmond indicated those changes in the rim and wildlife and fish area. There's also some increase in water rec funding levels. There's a heritage enhancement increase here related to prairies. The prairie wetland complexes is also 1.2 out of the game and fish. There's water rec funding levels are decreased out of the game and fish fund. This change is being proposed by the department and accepted in the House proposal. There also is some additional programs on 434. The governor requested and the House recommends $200,000 for the Red Lake Fisheries Management Study. Next one is a comprehensive lakes management study, accepted at $170,000, the recommendation. There's a $400,000 increase for increased activity on shoreland habitat out of the game and fish. And then the next one, 439, was a House File 275, was a Let's Go Fishing, a program recommended at $225,000. This is a program that funds fishing programs for seniors primarily through volunteers, and these dollars will be used to purchase some of the equipment and the gasoline and such things. Then the other one, 445, I would show the critical habitat license plate. This bill contains a language that allows that to be bought for RVs, and then this is the appropriation of those dollars that are expected to be brought in back to the department. If you move on to the next page, you'll see Eco Services Program in DNR. Change items begin on line 481. The significant ones that are on there on 487, there's an increase in the non-game wildlife promotion and program. On 489, there is 650,000 recommended for increased activities on the prairie wetland complexes. The other two are kind of technical. Next two are really technical changes that I've already mentioned. Moving on to page 13, there's some adjustment downward in water recreation levels, funding levels, and the next item is an increase of 128,000 in stream restoration activities in Eco Services. Moving into the enforcement division, the changes begin on line 524. There's a general fund reduction there of $1.2 million. This is the amount recommended by the governor. The next item is the shift, really, and then you move down to 527, and there's an increase of $400,000 for off-highway vehicle funding enforcement. On 529 and 530 are two off-highway and off-road vehicle items related to the safety program that is contained in the bill. 531 is an increase in water rec account. This is $540,000 over the biennium is financed out of the boat fee increase. Page 14, those two items up there I've already mentioned, they're kind of throughout the budget, the maintenance, service, and operations. Operations support program begins on 550, changes on 566. There is a large reduction, and this is the flip side of all those increases in the programs on 567. This is where that money was in the base, and it's moved into the operating divisions now. On line 570, you'll see the appropriation of lottery and lieu funds to the Como Zoo and the Duluth Zoo. Based on the statutory language on that. Moving on to page 15, there's a summary of the operation support, and then just a summary of the DNR total. If you move into 16, the Minnesota Conservation Corps is the next agency, and the governor had a recommendation to reduce the funding by $700,000. As Chairman Osmond indicated, the House has funded it at base. Board of Water and Soil begins on 631. Changes on 640, there's a reduction of $600,000 through administrative reallocations. On 641, the governor recommended a reduction of the Area 2 grant. The House funds that at base level. Science Museum begins on the bottom of the page. By turning it, you'll see the Science Museum is funded at the base, and Met Council Parks is funded at the base amount as indicated. Page 18 is a revenue summary. I also attached that on the front, so this is the same revenue changes that we talked about at the second page. So if you move through 19 to page 20, what you see is a summary by fund of the comparing between the base governor and the House. The only thing that Chairman Osmond indicated, like the line 731, the difference between the governor and in column X, you'll see the House to the governor is $3,007,000 under Plan B. Really a lot of numbers here that I'll just not go into unless you ask questions. On page 21 is a summary of the general fund, and I did go over this on the first page. This is just all the agencies combined, and you can see that on line 790, it does have the target for option B, and it indicates that this bill is right at target. This is where option A shows up on line 795 as additional reductions. 796 through 802 indicate by agency those reductions that would happen underneath the option A plan in the bill. That's Article 2 of the bill. And then on line 809 and 810, it balances to that target for option A. Moving on to page 22. Page 22 is really just a general fund expenditure summary by agency. This is the information that was on the page I first began with, but that does compare it to the governor's and then the base, so I won't go over that. And, Mr. Chairman, that really is a summary of the numbers.
All right. Discussion. Let's see. I think what we'll do is we'll take any other questions on this, but first I want to start with Representative Huntley and Representative Paymark, who have been very patient with their questions. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Osment or Mr. Reinholz, is there anything in here dealing with the permanent university fund?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Reinholz.
Representative Huntley, yes, there is. In the DNR departments of the Division of Lands and Minerals, the proposal that creates the Minerals Management Fund will affect the what's referred to as the PUF Fund in the same way as that it does to the Permanent School Fund. 20% of the revenue gained off of those lands will be deposited into the Minerals Management Fund, and then the department will be funded out of that that account. The net effect will be some loss to the permanent university fund because they are now paying for the expenditures where the general fund was in the past.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Huntley
and Mr. Reinholz, what is the decrease going to be in the university budget because of this change?
If you go to the Lands and Minerals Resources Management Program, I'm looking for. I believe it where it does not show up in this spreadsheet because it's just a permanent school fund. The money lost to those accounts shows up should show up in the K-12 budget and also in the university budget. What this shows is the appropriation out of the Minerals Management Fund. And I believe though that I am carrying it on the revenue page. It's just trying to. I'm jogging my memory, and if you go to the revenue page that I handed out at the originally, it is in the agency down near the bottom, DNR Minerals Management Fee. It's called an agency fund in the terminology of the budget, and the loss is in FY06 and 07 is $2,523,000.
So that's, Mr. Chair,
absolutely.
And Mr. Reinholz, so that's $2,523,000, is that the money that the university is losing?
Mr. Chairman, Reps. Hunter, yes.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I have another question, but it's interesting that we're balancing the DNR's budget and raising tuition fees at the university in this bill. Mr. Chair, and again, Mr. Reinholz or Representative Osment, I was interested in the two water permit fee increases.
Okay, before you go to that question, if I can, Representative Huntley, Mr. Reinholz, going back to Mr. Representative Huntley's previous question, isn't the real loss to the university, at least I think the way Representative Huntley is looking at it, the earnings on the $2,523,000 and not actually the $2,523,000 itself?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, I'm not, on the permanent school fund, that would be true. I'm not that, should I say, up to speed on how the university spends the PUF fund. I believe they use it for scholarships and for some endowed chairs, but I believe that they can spend the corpus.
I can maybe refer that question to Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, I believe it would work similar to the permanent school fund in that the earnings go into a trust fund. The actual loss to the university is going to be the investment income in each year off that trust fund. And, of course, if there are $2 million less of earnings in a year, that affects the investment income for a long period of time. But in any year, it's going to be, or in at least in the early years, it's going to be less than the $2 million. It would be 10% or 5% or whatever.
To that point, Representative Riccovino?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley and even to Mr. Marks and Mr. Reinholz. I don't believe that the loss is that big, but it's a shame there's a loss at all. And this is an issue that has been near and dear to my heart on both the Permian University and the school trust lands. And it is a shame that we have to balance the budget in this state now by taking money from school kids in K-12 that we've never taken before and taking management fees from the department, from the university. That money, Representative Huntley, right now is split 50-50, you know, between the Kohler NRI Research Lab and the Iron Range Scholarship Fund. The endowed chairs are out of the picture as of 1993. None of the money goes to the endowed chairs anymore. That money that was in that corpus before is still generating the interest for the endowed chairs, but the new money, and I can't believe that figure's as big as Mr. Reinhold said, and I see Mr. Bryce is up here to try to defend this, which I know he's going to have to hang his head below the table to try to do this, but I don't think the number's as big as he said, because I can't believe that the university has to pay that much. The permanent school fund isn't paying anywhere near that, so I'd be curious to see what that is. And Representative Huntley, I've told the university that they should find a management company up on the range that manages other people's minerals. Those millionaires out east got all those mineral rights, and they're checking into it because they can get a lot better deal than this one. So.
Back to Mr. Representative Huntley. Representative Huntley, did you have another question?
No, another set of questions on a different matter. So. Further on this.
Unless, did someone else have something on this? Representative Carlson.
I'm just trying to figure out what the committee jurisdiction here is. Representative Nornes, is he here? Yes. The reference was made to something about the higher ed bill and some of us in the higher ed bill. I don't recall anything in the higher ed bill that referenced these off funds, and so then that raises a question in my mind about committee jurisdiction. I mean, can this committee just dip into the university puff funds and impact on the bottom line without any communication with the higher ed funding division?
Well, I think what I would say, Representative Carlson, is that I know that the chairs of the higher ed funding division and also the education finance division were aware of this recommendation in the governor's budget, as I'm sure many other people were, and it was an item that we had discussion with, at least internally.
Mr. Chairman, you say we, meaning
I'm saying that I had discussions with Representative Nornes and Representative Sikora about it. I know that Representative Osmond did too, and so certainly there was an awareness that this was something that Representative Osmond was coming forward with, and it was a governor's recommendation as well, so it is certainly something that was out there that was in the governor's original budget that has certainly received a lot of notice.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't recall any discussions within the higher ed committee on this, at least formal discussions. That's informal discussions within one caucus, maybe something that took place, but I don't recall any discussion in the committee or where there was an opportunity for the university to comment with it on this issue, at least within the higher ed division. But maybe Representative Nornes recalls something differently than I do. I assume he probably recalls the discussions that you're referring to. But did we, Representative Nornes, have any discussion about this in our division that you recall?
Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson. No, we did not have any discussion in our committee.
Representative Solberg.
Interesting question, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, of that $2.3 million, how much, what's the split between the Permanent University Fund and the School Trust Fund?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Reynolds.
Representative Solberg, the amount in the Permanent School Fund is $2.5 million for the PUF Fund is $2.5 million for the biennium. The Permanent School is $3.984 for the biennium. They're the items on the, I'm referring to the revenue summary of revenue changes. They are listed down near the bottom of the non-general fund items under PS for permanent school, and the agency is where the PUP fund falls in as fund identifier.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson. Oh, okay, let me go. Representative Secord, at this point?
Yes, to this point, Mr. Chairman, we did have several hours of discussion in the Education K-12 Finance Committee. And essentially, what we do not like the thought that ongoing expenditures are being paid out of the school trust fund. And the $1.5 million cost there is divided between the university trust fund and the school trust fund dollars. But what we did think was a good idea is that some of that profit be invested in looking at the minerals and what the possibilities might be for exploration of minerals and so on of that land and aggregates. So we did agree to some investment in that area.
All right. Any other to this point, Representative Garland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to say that we did have quite a bit of discussion in the Education Committee, which is maybe why higher ed decided to not hear it, because we did spend so much time on it. But that would not be a good reason, of course. I want to say that it wasn't unanimous that we even use the money, though, for the mineral exploration, because that that could come out of the DNR budget and not have to come from the schools either and the money that's available. So it's a lesser evil, but it's still an evil in my book, because that money is supposed to be for the school children and the management should be with the DNR. And I, you know, Mr. Bryce is a hard man to beat up on here, though, because he's dealing with an agency that isn't funded well enough to have enough funds to even do that. So we were left with the choice of not having this, the minerals area make, I think it was like $20 million that they had made recently by doing this mineral exploration. If they didn't have the seed money to be able to do that, then we couldn't get that kind of a profit. And so it was down to those kind of choices, and those are the kind of choices we're making in this bill because it's not well funded.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
To that point, Representative Greiling, and members, and this gets to a point, and Representative Carlson, you know, I'm surprised that you're surprised, because I've been talking about this for 19 years. And I talked to you when you were the chair of the K-12 committee and chair of the higher ed committee. And I told you what was going on the timber side of this issue, and what went on the timber side of this issue for the last 25 years around here is now, as of this bill, going to start going on with the minerals. Now, unless Mr. Bryce, and he's a great guy and he does a great job, somehow created iron taconite in the last day on the range, he knows where every bit of taconite on the range, and he's known for the last 20 years. This is just to run a department because a governor is telling this state he didn't raise taxes, and in this bill there are fees. You're stealing from kids. You're stealing from the university. You're raising votes. You're putting a fee on snowmobiles they already pay. A license fee that was supposed to fund their trails, but because they're stealing that money, they got to have another fee to use the trails they're already paying for. So, no, don't try to justify. And Mr. Bryce is a nice guy, and I didn't raise this issue, Representative Osmond. Huntley started it. I said I wouldn't say anything, but I'm just going to sit back, but this is what's going on in this state, and it's not just in this bill. Representative Osmond is treating us kinder than most of the bills. So, no, Mr. Bryce did not create taconite in the last day. He's known where every bit of taconite is. He might try to find some aggregate, but it's a shame what's happening in this state in a lot of different omnibus bills.
Back to you, Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll ask my other questions, but first, it's a real pleasure to be on the same side of environmental issue with Tom Rukavina.
This isn't it.
You heard it here first.
Representative Osment or Mr. Reinholz, I have a couple of questions about the two
increases in water fees. One is the surcharge for summer use. The other is the water permit fee. And I'm not familiar with the first one, which is on page 102, which is a 50% increase in the water use permit processing fee. What is that? Who pays for it? And where, how much does it raise, and where is the money going?
Mr. Reynolds.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, there are the water increases in this bill. I'm trying to find where they are on my spreadsheet. On the fee increases, revenue changes sheet that I was talking to on the PUP fund, are indicated here that the summer, the surcharge on summer water use will raise $660,000 in the 06-07 biennium for the general fund. The DNR water permit fee increase will raise $522,000. The item that you're looking at on page 102 is one of several of the increases that are covered under the water permit fee increase. I don't have a breakdown of each one of the items. I'm sure I could get that from the DNR as far as which portions. The water permit fee increase includes increases not in the permit fees for those that pull water out, and also for once through cooling fees. And the summer surcharge is primarily on municipal and golf course users, as I indicated, not on ag users.
Well, forget about the summer one, Mr. Chair and Mr. Reynolds, but the water use permit processing fee, I mean, who is that charged to cities? Is it charged to somebody that's pulling water out of a lake? Or who is that charged to?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, anyone that is pulling, and there is a minimum amount, and I think you can see what they are in here, anyone that is pulling deep levels of water out of what is public waters out needs to take out a permit. It can be municipalities, it can be, as indicated, it can be corporations. We have corporations pulling water out, and they have permits. It can be nonprofits. It's anybody. It can be agricultural interests that are pulling water out. All need to take out permits. They all have different levels of permits depending on who they are and what kind of amounts of water they're taking out.
Well, Mr. Chair, and
Representative Huntley,
Mr. Reinholz, then the City of Duluth that pulls its water out of Lake Superior, or the City of Minneapolis that pulls its water out of the Mississippi, are they paying these fees, or are their homes and their communities paying these fees?
Mr. Reinholz.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, I believe they will be paying these fees if they are pulling water out of public water.
Okay.
And this is the permit application fee itself that they need to get their fee proposed raised here.
Mr. Lacusmal, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Lacusmal from DNR. The fee increases are three principal ones. One is for permit application fees for a new application that is made for filling, dredging, working in public waters, or appropriating water. So the initial application fee, they were last raised in 1988, $75 for an application fee. That's going up to $150. It raises $63,000 of new revenue. The second fee is to adjust the once-through cooling fee for businesses or entities that are using groundwater to heat and cool their buildings. Those are being converted off of groundwater by year 2010, and those fees were last adjusted in 1989. So just an adjustment for inflation raises those fees. That generates an additional $160,000. And the third fee change was an elimination of the of a minimum fee for agricultural irrigation when they use no water for a given year. Right now they have a special fee that's only $20, and that provision is eliminated, and they would pay the same minimum for water use as any other irrigation user.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Lacusmal, on page 102, the $200 to $300 per million gallons of water, is that a fee they say the City of Minneapolis pays every year, or do they?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Huntley, the water use fee is an annual fee, and those were changed 2 years ago. That fee on that you just mentioned is the once-through cooling fee. So that is just for those entities. There's about 47 entities that currently use once-through cooling water. And that's adjusted, basically. It was last changed at in 1989, I believe, when the Groundwater Act was amended. And that's adjustment for inflation, essentially.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hogsmo, those permit fees in total are $522,000, I guess, is the net increase for the biennium. Where's the money going?
Mr. Chair and Representative, that money all goes to the general fund.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hogsmo or Mr. Reinholz, on page 103, the summer fee. Again, it says municipal water use, irrigation of golf courses, and landscape irrigation. So if a city is supplying water to its people that live in its city, if they use more in the summer than they did in the winter, then they have an extra fee. And that totals up to $660,000. Is that what you're saying?
Chairman Ripson,
Mr. Reynolds.
That is correct.
And again, that $660,000, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Reinholz, where does the money go?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, goes into the general fund. A portion of it is then appropriated out to the waters program. The waters program in DNR is heavily funded in the general fund. If you look at their appropriation for 06-07 in general fund dollars, it's $21,684,000. They raise revenue, and Mr. Lacasmo will be more correct than me that it's significantly less than that appropriation. If you help me out on that, $3.8 million of total revenue to the general fund. So the increased fees will cover a portion of the previously uncovered general fund appropriation.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Reinholz, on page 7 of your spreadsheet, and I'm certainly not a
say. Let me ask you, Representative Huntley, if you're changing to a new area, can I ask you, do you have a lot of other questions? Because I've got some other people that are wanting to ask questions too.
Mr. Chair, this is the same issue. When I get done with this, I'll be done probably for the day.
All right.
On lines 271, 272, it shows of that $660,000, I see only $60,000 showing up. I'm not sure where's that $60,000
going. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Huntley, that $60,000 is an increased appropriation, a portion of what the $660,000 was requested in the governor's budget for increased appropriation. The House recommendation increased that by $60,000 for increased water activities in the DNR.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, then that to me means that they raised the fees $660,000 there, and $60,000 are staying in the DNR, and the rest is going into the general fund. And kind of interesting, if I want to grow corn in my backyard, I got to pay this fee, and Representative Hamilton's growing corn in his field. He doesn't.
Okay, I have Representative Tamar has been incredibly patient here. Representative Wagenius, you had raised your hand. Do you have a question to this point? And did you have a question to this point, Representative McNamara? Okay, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if my question is for the author, for Director Lacasmo, but would not the surcharge of $20 per million gallons, is this going to encourage better use of our waters and potentially saving some more of our water? Would this not encourage that? I just want to make sure about that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, yes, the increased cost is likely to cause some additional conservation, and the additional appropriation to DNR, we would use it for conservation efforts and looking at sustainability issues. So, yes.
And then just a quick follow-up, Mr.
Representative McNamara.
Okay, and then this does not apply to agriculture. The $20 surcharge does not apply to those that draw from public waters for agriculture.
Mr. Loxmo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, that is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I've got Representative Paymar. Did you have a question to this? Okay, I have Representative Paymar and Ogenius. And then what I'd like to do is get to amendments. So we. Oh, I didn't know I had you, Representative Anderson.
I said a different subject.
He did.
Oh, okay. All right, you did. Okay. We will take Representative Paymar, Ogenius, and Anderson, and then we'll go to amendments, and then we can go back to the bill after we're done with amendments. Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions, Representative Osment, on Section 129 on the Minnesota Conservation Heritage Council. I'm just curious about the council members. I understand that they'll get paid like anyone who would serve on a board in the state of Minnesota, but are you anticipating that these are going to be like part-time employees or full-time employees? I'm trying to figure. It seems like the responsibilities are enormous, and I'm just wondering what the compensation will be for the council members.
Representative Osment.
Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, they're eligible for per diems and the reimbursements of expenditures. But that's and so it's anticipated that they would be basically volunteers.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Paymar,
I'm just trying to understand. You called this a reform item in the bill, and you know, I know that the LCMR has been criticized in the past for being political, but I'm just trying to understand. I read the whole section. I'm trying to understand how and why you think that that these 11 council members are somehow going to be purer, and there won't be any politics in this process.
Representative Osment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar. It's anticipated that having individuals that have a certain level of expertise, as well as selection by the governor, that they would be able to make good quality decisions, as we, as you know, legislators attempt to do in their overall process. The biggest difference that we have here is that they'll be able to react quicker with regard to being able, when they just make a determination that they would like to fund something, they would have the ability through these provisions to make those appropriations.
Representative Paymar?
So you don't see the same lobbying, the same political pressure that going on with the LCMR is going on with the new council members under this new scheme?
Representative Osment?
Ms. Chair and Representative Paymar, to be very honest, I don't know if there's a distinction with the difference. I really haven't. It's a hypothetical. I really don't know how to answer your question.
Thanks.
Representative Ogenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Osment, when I talk to folks about this proposal, the questions I get the most are on option A and what's the DNR, because that's where you $4 million each year for short. People just want to have an understanding from you because I can't give them that understanding. It's more appropriate that you give them the understanding that what does that mean for programs like parks.
To the Representative Ogenius, if you would speak into your speaker, that would certainly help. We cannot hear you. Appreciate your help on that. Representative Osment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Ogenius. The proposal is, if we go to option A, is that there will be across-the-board reduction with regard to the administration of DNR, and that they would make the decisions as to where they would actually make the choices. When you have the sizable reduction that we're talking about in option A, I felt that there was for the committee to actually go through that process and make a program by program decision would be extremely time-consuming, and then I didn't know who would even vote for that bill to get it out of committee. So I felt that the best way to make progress and meet our target was to let people know that these are the this is how it would fall across the board to different departments and agencies and within our budget scope, and then present a work with regard to option B that really shows what we can look forward to if we're able to find enough revenues to keep us at that level.
Representative Borgenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The questions I get are more specific, and they are like, what's going to happen to park hours? Those are the kinds of questions, and I think if you can give some guidance to folks as you go through the process of negotiating this bill, what will be protected and what are some potential cuts? Because that's... Park hours are another thing. I hear forestry. I hear park hours again and again. So that's...
Representative, is that a question? Or
yes, it is a question for...
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius knows in the letter that she handed out, it's dated April 20th from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Underneath the park and recreation paragraph, it says staff cuts will also mean that contact stations will be open fewer hours for park visitors. Resource management projects will be resized or reduced, as well as education and programs. Park usage will be examined for seasonal closings or be designated as a day use area. So there definitely will be reductions within the park, in the parks in the state of Minnesota should we have the need to go to option A.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, is overtime pay for conservation officers in the bill?
Mr. Reynolds. And I believe you're referring to language that has been in the bill in previous sessions, probably, that guarantees overtime to the conservation officers. Yes, the same language that has been carried in recent bienniums is in this bill.
And how much is that?
Mr. Chairman, the rider language itself doesn't guarantee or indicate a certain amount of dollars. It talks to how the eligibility and calculation of dollars is done. I could ask the department how much. I'd have to refer to the department to get an absolute dollar amount on that.
Could we have someone from the department come down? Okay. Well, Representative Earhart, did you have something to this point while we're waiting?
I had something to a point a minute ago, and I couldn't get your attention, so I can wait till you get through this point and come back to the point that I had a point to.
All right. Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means, sir. Could you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Mr. Chair and members, Mike Hamp, Chief Conservation Officer with the Department of Natural Resources Enforcement Division. To the question, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I don't have the exact dollar amount, but the historic levels are about 400 hours at the straight time equivalency, and that would be for about 178-179 conservation officer positions, of which 153 are field positions.
And how much per hour?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson and members, it varies because some conservation officers are at the entry level and some conservation officers are at the top of the scale. I don't have that specific contract stuff with me.
Well, it sounds to me like it'd be about $3 million. And that's the amount that you're cutting out of PILT. So PILT is paying for the conservation officers.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I could get that number for you, but I don't believe that that's what the trade-off is in the bill.
I have another question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Anderson.
Are you laying off any people from the Forestry Department?
Mr. Thomas?
We have someone coming forward.
$4 million
a year. You're laying people off from forestry.
Commissioner Holston.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Mark Olson, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Will we be laying people off in the Division of Forestry? Mr. Chair, yes.
My gosh. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Anderson.
This department took a cut last time. How many people can you lay off? This is department is making money for the state of Minnesota, and you're laying people off.
Representative Solberg to that point.
On that same note, Mr. Holson, are you laying off people on Lafayette Avenue or the ones that are doing the work of putting up the timber sales?
Oh,
Mr. Holson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, what we're going to be doing under the governor's rec is we've got a couple different initiatives that we're doing. Is one, the federal government is taking over the fire control in the Boundary Waters Canoe area. We were the initial responders. We were the initial agency that reacted to covering those upfront or suppression costs within the Boundary Waters Canoe area. We're going to be suspending those contracts. We will be consolidating some area service level positions, but stewardship plans is where we're going to be making the reductions. We'll be concentrating our efforts on both the areas of fire and timber management. And I may have misspoken. Under the original governor's recommendation, I don't know if we're laying anybody off, but we'll be holding vacancies, I believe, is what we'll be doing. Under option A, nothing has been targeted for any layoffs in the Division of Forestry.
Mr. Chairman, ask the question again. Are you anticipating laying off any people on Lafayette Avenue?
Oh.
Or are you anticipating laying off foresters that will put up the timber sales that bring in the money to the state?
Commissioner Holston.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, as we talked from the last biennium and currently in this biennium, our priorities are trying to enable the field to provide their services. We are trying to concentrate our reductions and all reductions in 500 Lafayette or in the administrative areas. That's what we're trying to.
We cannot
eliminate field reductions and field impact.
Mr. Chairman, there has to be a fiscal note on that, because as long as I've been around here, and it's very similar to what happens in the Department of Revenue, when you add additional enforcement, they bring in money. And I remember a few years ago that we added a few foresters to do the timber sales. And they not even paid for themselves, but they brought a considerable amount of money into the state treasury. So if you are laying off people that do that, what is the cut or the loss of revenue to the state?
Commissioner Holston.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, again, under the governor's recommendations, we don't believe we're losing any of that timber target harvest ability, that we will be meeting those needs. As I stated in my letter to the Natural Resources Finance Committee, we will have to take those considerations under option A into account. We will have to, it's in the third paragraph where we talk about those management activities that do involve economic impact. Those will have to be taken into consideration, and we'll have to weigh those as we weigh all general fund impacts to the agency.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in the letter that you wrote on April 20th, you said, however, DNR timber sales goals will not be met.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, okay. That is under option A. I said may not be.
Commissioner Holston, quite frankly, that's not your fight, but it is realistically.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I did say that. It will not be done.
I think under both scenarios.
Okay, let me take Representative Earhart's point, and let's go to amendments, then we can go back to the bill. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There were some questions about the political nature of the new Council of Conservation Heritage Council. I don't know how that cannot be political with the governor appointing 11 citizens. It's got to be political if that was your question, Representative Paymar. But beyond that, we've got 11 non-elected citizens dispensing $40 or $50 million here in trust fund money. And I don't think that's correct. And I would like to make a motion to take this Heritage Council language and whatever goes with it out of the bill.
Okay, Representative Earhart, do you have a specific motion in terms of what page and line that you want? Because actually, I'm not sure, I think there's another motion or another amendment similar to what you want that is going to be offered by someone else.
I will withdraw my motion at this time, then, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I think there's one prepared that you will find similar to what you're talking about, Representative Earhart.
Now, do you want any more questions at this time about the...
No. If I can, Representative Earhart, let's go to amendments, and then we can go back to the bill once we've gone through the amendments. So, members, let's turn to amendments. And, members, I'd like to start out with the 0781 amendment, which I believe is a completely technical amendment. Chair will move the 781 amendment. Representative Osmond, could you confirm this is a technical amendment?
That's correct.
Okay, any discussion of the 781 amendment?
What does it do, Mr. Chairman?
It merely changes one number to another to reflect an addition mistake. See no discussion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson.
I know you said that was an error, but it did go up by $300,000 in both places. So what does that do to the bottom line on the bill end?
I believe Mr. Reinholz.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the spreadsheet reflects the larger amount in the bill, and the detail below it reflects the correct amount. It was just the rolled-up number was missed in drafting the bill. This does then make the bill the correct number as expressed in all the summaries that I reviewed.
And Representative Carlson, if you look at the two numbers below that, the subsections, they add to the $7,452,000.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, members, next let's go to the A39 amendment. I believe this is an amendment offered by Representative McNamara. Representative McNamara moves the A39 amendment. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As many of you may know, in the recent bonding bill, we had some money for reforestation, and this would just work with the Commissioner of DNR that they give preference to Minnesota Grow and Plant and Stock.
Chairman.
Representative Solberg.
I strongly support this one. I think it's very good.
Okay. Representative Bradley.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, there's been attempts in the past on Minnesota Grown. I'm wondering if you have a sense if other states did the same kind of thing, because I'm proud enough of Minnesota products to think that our products can be sold all over the nation, perhaps even globally. Are you sure this couldn't have a counter bad effect to us by doing this kind of thing?
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bradley, it was not our intent to require them to be Minnesota grown. It was more just that we would encourage the DNR to use Minnesota grown as a preference. It was not our intent to require that. As you know, when contractually, if we start to do that, we can end up in the Minnesota-North Dakota fight over a duck hunting situation, and that's not what we're going for at all. Okay.
Other discussion? Maybe I can ask counsel. Now, this does not require the DNR to buy only Minnesota-grown planting stock. Is that correct? It must be a preference.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It says it must give a preference in the purchase of stock for Minnesota grown planting.
Well, I guess I'm asking for an interpretation. I guess, Representative McNamara, your sense is you're saying that this is not a requirement that they can only buy Minnesota-grown stock.
That would be correct. Mr. Chair, if it'd be all right, I think I'm going to withdraw it right now and just work. I want to make sure with counsel and the author of the bill and everyone else, unless someone's got some language, I want to make sure that it's only a preference.
Well, how about if you substitute shall for must? Would that correct any concerns, counsel? May, well.
Oh, may would be.
May?
Would soften it.
Well, may doesn't, I mean, may, you might as well not do it. Well, why don't you think about it, Representative McNamara? Representative McNamara withdraws his amendment. Let's go to the next amendment is the A40 amendment. I believe this is also an amendment of Representative McNamara's. Representative McNamara moves the A40 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This deals with the fee. Chairman Osmond mentioned earlier there was a fee for the DNR to charge a flat fee of $2,000 when a private property would make an application for an easement across public property. And some members have come to me and some individuals that sometimes the actual cost of the DNR would be less than that. And so this would change that and would allow the DNR to only recoup the costs that they actually incur, and it's limited to $2,000, and then it would require the DNR to give the applicant an estimate of what those fees would be.
Mr. Chair?
Discussion. Representative Solberg.
This may be a good amendment, but what does it do to the bottom line?
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, currently the DNR was taking these costs within the department, and there's only a total of 10 of these a year. So their estimate was it would be $20,000 previously. I guess they could testify if what the fee would actually be in this case. I don't know how much less.
If it's that little amount,
Representative Solberg.
If it's that little amount, I'm not concerned.
Okay. Other discussion to the A40 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A40 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, the A40 amendment is adopted. All right, the next amendment I have is the A36 amendment. I believe this is an amendment of Representative Gunther's. Representative Gunther moves the A36 amendment. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This simply allows ATVs to be used on and operated by public utilities and maintaining their lines on trails not normally used by ATVs. They normally use digger trucks and so forth. They want to use a vehicle that most suits their needs.
Discussion of the A36 amendment. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this the only bill with ATV stuff in it, or is this the only place we have to worry about this? Or is there another bill floating around with that?
Representative Hackbarth, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart. There is another bill that's on the general orders right now that has some issues with ATVs in it. It's a companion to Senator Marty's bill. I'm not even sure what it is. There's just a small provision about ATVs in there, and we're even thinking about maybe taking that out when we do it on the floor.
Well, so
that's the only other bill that has anything to do with ATVs.
No vehicle then for ATV crunching up the terrain. This is the one that we got to.
This is the only ATV bill floating around.
Thank you.
Other discussion to the A36 amendment. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A36 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A36 amendment is adopted. Next, I'll go to the A19 amendment, A19-1 amendment. I believe this is an amendment of Representative Abrams. Representative Abrams moves the A19-1 amendment. Representative Abrams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The A19-1 amendment was put onto the Bill and Tax Committee. Unfortunately, I had a bill up in civil law at the time. What the amendment that was Representative Bill's amendment does is it puts in statute not only a increase in TILT payments, but if that increase is not met, it creates a special levy in TILT counties on cabins, on timberland, and on iron ore facilities.
Vacant mining.
Vacant mining facilities. So it's about what I heard earlier was about $3 million a year that a county may do, so it may be an increase on cabins. Additionally, it creates a separate taxing classification, if you will, a tax base of these properties. And I had been in the room, I think I would have argued pretty long and strenuously against it. When I came back, I saw it already been put on the bill, and I really am not one who moves to reconsider actions like this in the tax committee. I wasn't there, but I get another bite at the apple in Ways and Means, and if I'm unsuccessful here, a third bite on the apple on the floor. So I would ask that we delete the bill language that got hung on the bill in the tax committee with scant discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, you were there, and Representative Krinke was there, and a few others. Representative Earhart, we had a lengthy discussion on this, Representative Abrams.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is that this bill is cutting payment in lieu of tax payments by $3 million, and some of us on this committee, including Representative Solberg, Anderson, myself, Representative Huntley, Representative Hilty, others have huge amounts of land that folks like to use as their playground, and that's fine. It's public property. It should be used as all of your playground, but it generates no tax revenue for our schools and cities and townships, yet there are roads that got to be maintained for it and everything else. So how do we do it? You give us the better way, Representative Abrams, to do this. But every county, I might add to the members of this committee, every county is losing TILT money in this bill.
That's right.
Even they're even taking away from Edina, from what I understand.
Yeah.
But that's all we try to do is make up the laws for the township and county roads that we have to maintain so that the public can still use these lands. And that's what this was intended for, this payment in lieu of tax money. And I thought we came up with a good way to do it. It's permissive language, incidentally, members. No county board has to pass the levy.
Well, Representative Rukavina, since you mentioned my name, I was there and I voted against it. I didn't think that we should, first of all, with the TILT land, I mean, we're not taking away all the TILT payments. This is the inflationary increase, and we have taken inflators out of the rest of the budget just about everywhere else. And so I think the governor, in making this recommendation, was just trying to be consistent and taking it out of this, too. But secondly, you know, I find it particularly interesting that the levy is only applied to non-homestead, non-commercial, and certain other properties, but not to, say, homestead properties of people who are up there. And I know I asked Representative Dill when he brought this amendment forward, you know, are there constituents of yours that use these TILT properties? And he certainly said, yes, there are, and obvious there are. And I guess I didn't think that it was fair that we should be levying it on just these selected classes. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, the wording that's in the bill is kind of like lifting the caps on the school districts. So it's an opportunity for us to address an issue, Representative Earhart, and we just want to be able to raise our taxes.
Well,
Representative Earhart.
Yeah, but Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, this is one other time when the supercharged turbocharged postcard would come in. You would raise my taxes on my cabin. I'd send my postcard in, but I couldn't vote on it. So,
Gemma, I thought your vote, your postcard was a vote.
No, not really. Why don't we put, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Hart?
Why don't we put a fee on the users of the properties up there, the ATV people and the OTV people and the XYZ people that use all of that stuff that come in there for their recreation. Put a little extra fee on them.
I'll move
Representative Rukavina.
I'll move to amend we pay this with the
money from the Edina Municipal Liquor Store.
Since all those drunks are up there using this property.
Giving expert testimony, Representative?
Oh.
Huh?
What do you say? All right. Okay, is there other discussion to the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'm out of the closet on that issue.
But a lot of you aren't. But I've got records.
All right. A little humorous interlude. Is there other discussion to the Abrams Amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, I still, Representative Abrams has not answered a question. How do you pay for the services that we have to provide for these lands when the money's being cut?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, first, the money isn't being cut. There just isn't an inflationary increase. And secondly, Representative Rukavina, I point out over the years that the TILT payments have increased exponentially since 1999. And, you know, the question is, what did you do before? I think you've gotten a great deal of relief through increased TILT payments over the years, Representative Rukavina, and taxing only certain classifications of property, none of which can vote, I don't think is very fair.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Abrams, I'm not as familiar on the last increase on this issue as Representative Dill is, but I believe it's this is adjusted every 5 years, and I also know from being on LCMR that there are different formulas, and that one formula is so much per acre, the other one is a certain percentage of the value of the land. In the metropolitan area, when you have your payment in lieu of, on the, let's say, on the Mississippi River for a water access, that generates a considerable amount of money for your county. On ours, it's basically a flat fee right now, but with land prices escalating up there, vacant land, merely because a lot of your constituents are coming up and paying a huge price for it, as they did with cabins, that adjustment would have taken place and we would have gotten a lot more than even what this amendment is doing. Now, I don't think it's a great deal to, I mean, for all the vacant land in St. Louis County, it probably could fit most of the metropolitan area just in the state land that the payment in lieu of money is coming from. And yet we have to have roads for people to use and maintain on there, and so it was a fair way for the county or the state to pay a small type property tax. This was our way to do it. I said in tax committee we would put it on all land if there was a problem with it. But, you know, we're paying for those lands to begin with, so the DNR isn't, and that was our way to accomplish it. But that's okay. We're used to you know, taking in the shorts around here, so I guess one more time, if, you know.
Other discussion. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to add to what Representative Rukavina said, it's not just roads, it's not just access, it's also fire protection, it's also emergency services. And I know in by county, there's been a real struggle to maintain the volunteer fire departments that are located in those areas of the county because we don't have the funding for that. And yet, a good percentage of the emergency calls that those departments answer are for people who are there, non-residents, in recreational use accidents. So I think that the members should really consider the fairness of this proposal because, as Representative Rukavina says, somebody's got to pay for it or it's not going to be there. And if you want to come up and ride your four-wheeler through the woods and have nobody respond if you're lost or if you fall off and break a leg, that's fine. But think about it.
Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the Abrams motion on the A-19 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Division.
Division being called, all in favor, raise your hands. All opposed, raise your hands.
Hey, Ruth Avina.
I'm worried now.
Second time tonight.
Okay, there being 20 ayes and 15 nays, the motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Next, let's go to Representative Otremba and the A-18 amendment. Representative Otremba moves the
Actually, Mr. Chair, that's...
Oh, that's not you. I thought it was. I'm sorry. Who has the A-18 amendment? Maybe no one. All right. Let's go to the A-25 amendment then. Representative Solberg moves the A-25 amendment. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Earhart, this is the issue that you were talking about earlier. And I think I have a very deep concern about this as well. This removes the governor's proposal on the Minnesota Resources Fund, the one that he tries to create a council that's appointed by him to take general fund money and appropriate as they see fit, or monies from the state. None of those people indeed hold an election certificate or are accountable to anybody else. I don't blame this governor. Governor Purpich tried to do something with it. Governor Carlson tried to do something with it. Governor Ventura tried to do something with it. Probably Governor, the next governor after this one will try to do something with this fund. But you know, there may be some criticism of the LCMR process, but we still have to have an election certificate, in my opinion, and be held accountable for with the process. Whether we want to change the makeup of the LCMR commission, if you want to do something else with it, some people are upset with that. That's a different issue, a different debate. But in the bill that we have here, we're actually giving a large sum of money to an advisory council that's appointed by the governor. And you know, some people may like it this time, but the next governor they may not like who the recommendations they make. Now, we do have a system in place that citizens have a great deal of input, not only from the Citizen Advisory Council, but also from the general public as a whole. I know when I was on the LCMR, I traveled from my home on an evening went to two harbors and listened to the citizens' input into what projects they should be funded. I went down to took three or four different nights out of my schedule to hold public hearings throughout the state of the type of projects that we should be funding. And we can always criticize that that my project didn't get funded, or you know, we shouldn't be funding this. But that's a decision that we should be making on the in the legislative body itself, with good input from all kinds of citizens. So I would hope that we would remove this. If there's a concern about the direction of the commission itself, then bring forth those type of reforms. But to just go to a citizen and let them spend the money, I think, is difficult. Additionally, I think, quite frankly, you may end up with a constitutional problem with this one.
Discussion to the Solberg A-25 amendment. I want to call on Representative Osmond, the author of the bill, when he is available. Representative Osmond, do you have any position on the Solberg amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would encourage you, we do not support the Solberg amendment. As you, I'd like to make a few points, Mr. Chair, if it's all right, because this is actually trying to take this provision completely off the table. This is the only place that this particular provision is alive at the current time. Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources has some flaws in it that really needs to, that's calling for reform. The lack of long-term strategic planning to address the state's conservation needs is a major concern. The multi-step bureaucratic, multi-year process that we currently have just makes it impossible for them to quickly take advantage of opportunities or critical needs. And the citizens' input often is discarded in favor of legislative priorities. The Minnesota Conservation Heritage Council would be an independent board of citizens and experts. The trust fund expenditures to be made in strict accordance with the trust fund constitutional dedication and a 10-year conservation plan developed by the council. Upfront biennial appropriation of trust funds proceeds to the council for grant making, with legislative review of the council's actions and expenditures before the next biennium's appropriation. The legislature's not taken out of the picture. What the legislature is actually looking at what the council has done and will be giving authorizations for the future expenditures. The independent expert board is made up of 11 persons appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. One member per congressional district with three at-large members, staggered six-year terms, removable for cause or by a supermajority vote. The board members must have demonstrated expertise, experience with conservation policy science, and not be a paid employee of any conservation organization. The conservation strategic plan that this calls for is foundation to develop a 10-year strategic conservation plan updated every 2 years to identify and address the state's conservation needs. The grant decisions made more frequently to address needs identified in the strategic plan. Those grants must demonstrate a direct benefit to the Minnesota Natural Resources, and current LCMR staff would continue to staff the council. The biennial appropriation would be kind of the fill-the-bucket approach. The legislature would appropriate the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund proceeds to the council at the start of each biennium. The biennial appropriation would give the council the ability to respond to opportunities and critical needs as they arise, rather than wait 2 to 3 years for the LCMR process. The legislature maintains authority and responsibility to oversee council activities and to hold the council accountable like any other state agency. Also, audits of the council activities to be conducted by the legislative auditor. The organizations that have really worked together to try and put this before the legislature is the representatives from the Nature Conservancy, the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, Pheasants Forever, the current chair of the LCMR Citizens Advisory Committee, the Trust for Public Lands, the Isaac Walton League, Ducks Unlimited, Minnesota Waterfowl Association, the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance, Minnesota Audubon, and also representatives of the Parks and Trails Council have participated, the Fish and Wildlife Alliance, Legislative Alliance. All of these have come together and saying the current process is not working, and we need to have a different approach on how we're dealing with the trust fund dollars. That's what this puts on the table, is a different approach. And we'd appreciate our being able to retain this as we go to negotiate with the Senate, because I know they have strong disagreement and concerns about this provision, and we'll be able to come up with a compromise proposal that everyone can be proud of and can meet all of our long-term needs. Mr. Chair, if I could have Representative Hackbarth also speak to this issue, because it's really been his bill that has been carried forward.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is my bill that I brought forward, and we rolled it into the Environment Finance Bill. I'm carrying this bill for the governor. This is not a department bill. Members, you heard Representative Osmond name off all the people that have been working on this bill, and there's a number of those people in the audience tonight that support this measure. We knew going in that we weren't going to get the exact bill that the governor presented. We are negotiating with the governor's office, and all these different groups are working together to come up with a compromise with the Senate. We'd sure like to go into the conference committee with this legislation so we have something to deal with the Senate on. If we take this out of the bill now, we won't have anything going into conference committee. I think we can bring back a good proposal out of the conference committee.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, if I was sitting in the audience with one of those groups as well, and the proposal was to give me a bunch of money that I can spend, I'd be for it too. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. And I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming the governor. The accountability is after the fact. You know, if we took every State Department bill and had as much scrutiny of the expenditures of the funds
right.
as what this scrutiny is in, we'd have a lot better state government. You'd be surprised what we could find out what's happening in state government if we had that kind of scrutiny. I remember one time I had a bill and introduced a bill to do away with the Department of Public Safety. You'd be surprised what I found out about it when we started, all of a sudden they didn't exist anymore. So if there's some problems with the LCMR, bring those problems forward and address them. But don't give, you know, a pot of money to someone to spend, because then you're really going to have some problems, in my opinion. But I would hope that you'd, I don't want to belay the issue.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hackbart.
And Representative Solberg and members, we do believe that there are some problems with the LCMR the way it currently is. We'd like to speed up the process a little bit. It takes 2 years to get a project on the ground at this point. I do believe that when Representative Osment and I come back from conference committee, that we will have legislative oversight in the proposal, and there won't just be citizen members. I think, well, what we'd like to get to eventually is maybe 50% legislators, 50% citizens. Those things are all in the negotiations as we speak, and that's really where we want to end up. But we have to have something going into the conference committee, and we'd sure like to hang on to what we've got for now.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Solberg.
You know, I understand the concept of a conference committee, but if you know, if we go in with this particular proposal, then the legislature, as some people have said, are out of the negotiations. There's five of them. And quite frankly, I may not like what comes back. And or I might have some ideas that I want to express. If you had had some kind of a proposal that you had negotiated before us, if there were problems with the current makeup of the LCMR, if we address those problems with it, I'd be all for it. If there's problems, identify and address them. But we're not doing that. We're going to put five people on each side and five on the other side in a room and come up with a compromise. Maybe I'll be over with Representative Abrams on unicameral after all.
Representative Osment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If that the process of how we develop legislation is of concern, and that would require us then to, whenever we're fearful of addressing an issue or allowing people to work on it within the legislative process that's been established in custom and usage for a long time, if we react by just removing everything, we'll never get creative ideas being brought forward. We know that the citizens advisory group like this, and or a council that has been able to establish funding mechanisms for other states to try and stabilize their support for their environmental and natural resources activities have worked. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be have a legislative certificate or election certificate in order to make these decisions. And but we do want to make sure we have accountability in that overall process. And I believe what is on the table may not be the final product, but I believe it is one that does retain accountability. It does allow for some a new approach to be discussed, and for us to see how we can improve on what we already have in the state of Minnesota. And we want to make sure that we're following our Constitution, and this proposal absolutely requires that.
Representative Hackbarth and Osment, I know I've talked to you about this, and I just want to say that I don't think that what we have in the bill right now is the optimum, and that it still needs some additional work. But at the same time, I have served on the LCMR. I found, much to my surprise, that I was an automatic member of the LCMR 2 years ago when I was named Ways and Means Chair, and all of a sudden I had these notices starting to come to me, and sure enough, there's something in statute that says that the Chair of Ways and Means is on the LCMR. So I started going, and I think that's probably a good thing, but I share some of the concerns that Representative Hackbarth has. And so I guess I also share some of my friend Representative Solberg's concerns, but I'm going to oppose Representative Solberg's amendment because I want to see some progress made on this issue, and I don't see that just going back to where we are is going to give us a chance to make progress.
Representative Solberg. To clarify the statute for you, It's you or your designee.
Yes, I could have designated someone, but after I found I was named, I was so curious, I decided I had to serve.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think you may have hit the nail on the head, some of the problems with it. But then let's bring those problems forward and address them.
Other discussion? Representative Earhart.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I served on that for the better part of 6 years. And we had a citizens advisory group, and if I remember correctly, every year we made our selections. Their number 1 to 18 or 20 projects was included in what we did, without any question. But yet we were the ones, the elected officials, with the accountability that made the decision of what we were going to recommend to the full legislature. We didn't vote the money out, but we suggested to them by a lot of work. And I don't see any reason why we need to negotiate with the Senate, who has no language as far as I know. What are you going to negotiate when they have nothing? I don't understand what kind of sense that is. I certainly believe that we ought to improve the process that we have now, and not just throw it out the window with the rest of the bathwater here.
Seeing no further discussion, the motion recurs on the Solberg Amendment. All in favor of the Solberg Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
I'm going to call for a division on that one. All in favor of the Solberg Amendment, raise your hands. Okay, all opposed, raise your hands. Keep them up. There's a lot of hands to count. Please keep your hands up. Okay, there being 18 ayes and 20 nays, the Solberg motion fails and the amendment is not adopted. The next amendment I'll take up is the 091 amendment. And I'm not sure who the author of that one is. It may be Representative Abler. Representative Abler moves the 091 amendment. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This was a very similar amendment that we voted off the floor, I think maybe 2 weeks ago. The issue has to do with the Coon Rapids Dam, and there's some chance that it's going to be sold. Right now it's undergoing some repairs, and it's been a very important local issue. The Three Rivers District has adequate funds to make the repairs. I think they have $1.2 million in their account. They'll get $250,000 from the DNR, and they'll have $200,000 or $300,000 left at the end. OPIP chips in. Oak County chips in periodically, I think $75,000 a year toward dam repairs, or a little bit more than that. So there's no sufficient funds in the fund to maintain the repairs, and there was some challenge about a copper dam, which is now moot, and the effective date of this is next January to remove any inferences about that issue. But this would help Three Rivers to be encouraged to maintain the dam in the state that they'll be fixing it at, and then whoever should buy it afterwards would also be encouraged to maintain it so we can have a recreational pool there.
Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, I know very, very little about this. I think I support the author's amendment, but the Three Rivers Park District, is that an elected or appointed group?
Yes.
Elected or appointed?
Yes.
Represent
both?
Both, yes.
It seems that, to me that... they have not been very responsive to the people up in that area. Is that correct? Would you say that that's the case?
Yes.
Abrams?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Mr. Silver.
I guess maybe I should renew my motion, the one that just lost.
Representative Abrams.
Is anybody here from Three Rivers Park District?
Is there anyone here from the Three Rivers Park District? I guess there is. Welcome to the Ways and Means Committee. Could you state your name for the record? And I guess, Davey, give us your position on this amendment, or Representative Abrams, do you want to ask some questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I happen to be in the Speaker's chair when Representative Tinglestad offered the amendment. I didn't know enough about it at the time. I saw a opinion piece in the St. Paul newspaper that was very negative about the Coon Rapids Dam and this amendment, and I was just wondering if Three Rivers has had an opportunity to look at the amendment, to work with Representative Abel and Representative Tinglestad, and what their view of it is, because I haven't heard from a lobbyist, I haven't heard from anybody about it outside of that column.
Mr. Chair, members, Bo Carlson, Three Rivers Park District, Representative Abrams, the Park District was aware of the amendment as it was included on the Park District's name change bill that was just recently on the House floor. The Park District was unaware of this amendment prior to its introduction. The Park District does not support this amendment. The Park District is the owner and operator of Coon Rapids Dam. We have discovered in the early parts of 2005 a void underneath the horizontal apron of the dam that required some major safety repairs, forcing the Park District to be unable to raise the water level of the dam. Those underwater repairs are estimated to be $1.2 million. The Park District is moving forward with those repairs in an effort to ensure that we can maintain the safety of the dam structure itself. We were told by a consultant that we should lower the pool level, and we unfortunately lost the recreational, or are presented with the loss of the recreational pool upstream of the dam itself. There was an option presented for a temporary cofferdam. However, that cofferdam was roughly $400,000 and just would be able to be used during the season of 2005. The Park District is in the position right now of trying to find a owner for the Coon Rapids Dam, preferably a agency of some kind that is looking for hydroelectric possibilities, and get this dam, which is a very large burden for the taxpayers of suburban Hennepin County, off the backs of Hennepin County and on to a private entity of some sort that can generate some kind of hydropower and no longer have the obligation of paying for this through suburban Hennepin County taxpayers.
Any other questions for Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kelleher.
I'm gathering from your comments, Mr. Carlson, that the earlier amendment, while you may not have supported it, you were aware of it and didn't present any sort of problem. This amendment seems to, in the shall language on line 12, shall extend into perpetuity. I kind of question whether that's something we normally do here about the obligations that we expect of a future owner of a property. So, Mr. Carlson, could you comment on how Three Rivers looked at that first amendment on the House floor that was offered? Because I see these amendments as, although dealing with the same topic, that's about where the similarities, that's where the similarities end, because this is quite different.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher, we were not aware of the amendment as it was introduced on the House floor. The Park District certainly had concerns regarding that amendment because it did seem to encumber operations and maintenance funding that the Park District receives from the state. Certainly, we need to find out more information regarding this amendment and how it may tie our hands for future options, again, in an effort to release this from a park agency. We have no interest of maintaining the ownership or operation of a dam by any means. Unfortunately, it was something our forebears accepted from NSP many years ago and has been nothing but headaches for the Park District, and we are trying our best, or our board is trying our best, to release the Park District of that obligation.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was just trying to recall a conversation I had a few days ago about this, and when you have the pool upstream, and you create the recreational activities there, whoever is going to own this, what happens to the recreational activities downstream? Individual from Minneapolis indicated that there's some negative impact downstream, and so if one of you that might have some knowledge about that could comment so we would have some understanding of what the impact of this repair would be.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, this dam does not serve any purpose other than a recreational amenity. It only provides an upstream pool. By allowing the water to flow freely, which we are doing right now because of the dam structure or the integrity of the dam itself, by allowing that water to flow freely through the dam, if anything, downstream they're seeing a larger flow than they typically have seen. They're probably used to more drier conditions during this time of year, certainly as the spring floods start to abide. They may be seeing additional flow in that area. However, it doesn't serve any safety or flooding or any impacts to downstream residents. Again, this pool is only a recreational, or this dam serves only as a recreational dam.
Mr. Representative Carlson, I was left with the impression from that conversation that they viewed that as a positive with the additional flow downstream.
Mr.
Carlson,
Chair, Representative Carlson,
the negative. I'm just trying to sort this out.
Mr. Chair, Carlson. Representative Carlson, that certainly for some folks would be a positive that there would be more flow downstream. However, that is not typical. That's not what we would normally see in a regular year where we are obligated by permit through the DNR to maintain that high pool level that would not allow for a high flow downriver, which the residents downstream are more than likely currently seeing.
Thank you.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, just a question. Without the language starting on 12, could the Park River sell it to me for a buck and relieve yourself, and then I can just say, well, I'm sorry, I don't have to maintain it, without the language starting on 12?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I do not believe we would certainly be happy to sell you the dam for a dollar. However, any sale of the dam needs to be approved by the DNR, and I do believe they would have the opportunity to either approve or not approve the sale of that dam based on the ability of the future owner to continue to maintain the dam in its current what it's intended for, and also for the long-term obligation, with the understanding that if that owner were to default or not be able to pay for the dam, it may turn back to the state at a future time.
So the line in 12 is just a reinforcement of starting on 12, or that we shall extend to the successors, is just merely reinforcement of current law or rule of the DNR.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, that may be the case, again, with just a first reading of this bill and without some consultation with the DNR. That certainly may be the case.
Representative Abler to this point.
Well, Mr. Chair, in general, I'd like to just, the in perpetuity part I don't think is necessary. I think that the extend would be sufficient to get our intent across, and there may be some language crafting to do as this bill moves to the process and approaches conference, but I'm comfortable in working with the Three Rivers and the department to clean that up. But I think at this point I'd like to move on line 12 to delete the word in perpetuity and incorporate that into my amendment.
Okay, Representative Abler, you want to, page 1, line 12, only delete the words in perpetuity?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And I'll incorporate that amendment.
And he incorporates, all right, Representative Abler makes an amendment and incorporates that into his amendment. Okay, Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, a couple questions. Where's the dam, and what is its purpose, and who pays for the upkeep now? You mentioned Suburban Hennepin County, I think.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, the dam is north of the 610 Bridge on the Mississippi River between the cities of Coon Rapids and Anoka. The dam is under the ownership and operation of Three Rivers Park District. Our taxing jurisdiction is Suburban Hennepin area. We are outside of the Minneapolis border, so all of Suburban Hennepin County outside of the city of Minneapolis. We cover all the operations and expense, operations and maintenance for the dam itself. And we have in the past received dam safety funding from the DNR for large projects when we've had to do some replacement or some repair of some kind. We are, as was mentioned earlier, hoping to receive some dam safety funding in the current bonding bill for a part of this emergency repair that we currently have in front of us.
Representative Gorman.
What is the purpose of the dam? What could you talk about? Why is it there? What's it doing there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gorman, I'm sorry. The dam is there simply for a recreational reason. The dam was owned by NSP and at one point was a power generating facility. However, in the mid-50s, they were not generating enough power out of this dam. The Park District at that time took over operation and ownership of the dam for a dollar, eliminated any hydroelectric facility, and simply used it for a recreational pool above the dam, as well as a walkway that connects the two counties, both Anoka County and Hennepin County. Before or prior to the construction of the 610 bridge, that was really the only way for residents to cross from Hennepin County to Anoka County was along the walkway of the dam.
Representative Holberg and then Dempsey. Representative Holberg. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Carlson, did I hear you say that the state will become an owner of this particular dam? How does that occur?
Mr. Carlson.
Or did I mishear you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dempsey, I apologize. You may have misheard me. Any sale that the Park District may look at would have to be approved ultimately by the DNR to ensure that future owners have the ability to maintain a dam of this size and structure.
Representative Abel, I don't want to belabor things because we're spending a lot of time on this dam amendment. But if we look at line 15 and 16, I'm wondering, you know, you've got the effective date January 1st, 2006. Is there any chance this is going to sell before January 1st? Because if it's sold before January 1st, then none of this would apply, right?
Well, Mr. Chair, the reason actually was trying to be friendly to the Three Rivers District in regard to the copper dam issue, which was very controversial. And I did not want this to see as coming to any payback. The issue that came about in this whole matter was, who's going to look after this dam? And it's a critical recreational facility in the area, and it's used by who knows how many, but 40,000 or more people. They have talents. Half a million people go to the park, and some 40,000 or more actually fish and water ski. And it's the only real lake in the area for the probably 10-mile circumference around there, at least of any real consequence. And
I guess my question, though, Representative Abler, is there any chance this is going to be sold before January 1st, 2006?
I don't know, Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Carlson.
Chair, to that extent, the Park District is in the process of negotiating with the Minnesota Municipal Power Association, MMPA, which is a consortium of roughly 10 cities that generate a variety of alternative power sources and provide them to their municipalities at a reduced price. The Park District has been in negotiation with these entities in an effort to try to come to an agreement to sell the Coon Rapids Dam to the MMPA. It is the Park District's understanding that that proposal will be submitted to our board within the month, and possible consideration and possible sale within the next couple months. Again, I assure you our board is very interested in selling this dam and having an alternative owner and not have the Park District any longer in a position to be in charge of the operation of the dam itself.
Well, Mr. Carlson, I guess my point is that if you sell the dam before January 1st, the people who buy it would not appear to be covered by the requirement that they maintain the pool at that level, because, I mean, future people who might buy it from them would be, but if this is effective January 1st and they bought it before January 1st, I don't think this law would cover them.
Oh, Mr. Chair?
Representative Holberg.
I thought we deleted the language that would have extended this requirement into any other future operators or owners.
Well, all we actually deleted, Representative Holberg, is the in perpetuity language, which I'm not sure if it really had that much effect. Representative Hilty?
to that point, Mr. Chair, that's what I was going to say. I think that all we did and all Representative Abler accomplished in removing in perpetuity is to remove a redundancy. I don't think it changed the meaning of the amendment in any way, whatever.
Representative Abler?
Well, Mr. Chair, are you comfortable with that? What I don't want to do is step on the cofferdam thing. I think it'd be, if you have advice to me, I will change the date to make it effective upon enactment or something with the stipulation that we would not intend for this to meddle with the cofferdam issue, because I was trying to keep it a long ways away from that point. So let's try to be friendly to their interest in doing their work this year. Advice, Mr. Chair?
I guess I don't know how to advise you on that, Representative Abler. I guess I don't know enough of the details of the other cofferdam issues. Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, I actually have visited the Coon Rapids Dam. I biked, I think, French Regional Park and biked over there one day. And it's a neat little site, but I can understand the financial obligations of upkeep of this. So help me understand. Right now, and maybe Mr. Lacasmo is going to have to come down here, there's a current permit on this site through the DNR that keeps the water level at this watermark through these months?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher, that is correct. The Park District has a permit with the Department of Natural Resources that stipulates the water level that must be maintained above the dam itself.
And, Mr. Chair,
Representative,
trying to understand then, so if the sale happens to another entity, that entity would then take over that existing permit, or they would have to apply for a new permit? Are they grandfathered, I guess? That's the question. I mean, the question is, how necessary is this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher, with hydroelectric, there's some obligations of keeping the pool level higher throughout the year. That's how it becomes feasible for power generation. I will have to defer to Mr. Lacasmo regarding the conditions of a permit between the department and whatever the future owner may have to do.
Mr. Lacasmo. Representative Kelleher, the permit is essentially transferred to the new owner.
Okay, and
but the same conditions would apply unless there's a negotiation to change.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Lacasmo, just to understand this type of permit, does it go into perpetuity, the permit itself, or is it reviewed periodically? And how does a change come about to this type of permit?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelleher, two things are in play. One is the permit that specifies an operation plan, and those are reviewed periodically. But this also, on all the dams in the state, we do inspections on a periodic basis and may require work to be done to assure that it's maintained in a safe condition. So there's both the dam safety aspects of this and then also the permitting and the water regulation that's covered in the permit.
So,
Representative Kelleher,
you may not want to answer this question, Mr. Lacasmo, but I'm going to ask, is this language really needed then, or is the permit in effect and therefore the pool is going to exist?
Mr. Lacasmo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kelleher, the permit in the operations plan right now allows for a winter drawdown. And so this amendment still allows for that winter drawdown. Whether or not what's going to happen, this would conflict at some point with hydropower, because hydropower would be looking at a more permanent, higher, consistent elevation. So there would be some discussion when we start looking at hydropower if that comes to pass.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Kelleher,
one more question to Mr. Carlson. I'm just trying to figure out our way through this thing we've been presented with here tonight. Does this make it less likely that the MMPA may enter into an agreement with the Three Rivers Park District to actually purchase this dam?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher, I certainly can't speak for MMPA, but it may be an encumbrance of the sale. We are looking again we're in the process of putting a proposal together, and at this time, for this type of language to be included, it'll certainly put MMPA in a position where they're going to have to investigate what the long-term ramifications of this may be. as will the Park District for that matter.
Representative Beard.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, so if I was a power company and wanted to run a hydroelectric dam, I had a state law that said I had to hold the water right at 830 feet. That could be difficult, if I'm not mistaken. If running an effective turbine required that I raise the water level 7 feet, 6 feet, 10 feet, something other than this, that would really get in the way. That would throw a wrench in the gears of negotiating for this to be a hydroelectric facility, wouldn't it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, it may to have a specific designation of what that water level has to be. It may be difficult. However, the Coon Rapids Dam, based on the elevation of the dam itself, can only hold water to a certain level. I'm not sure if 830.1 is the exact figure. At some point, if the water is higher than the height of the dam itself, the water will run over the top of the dam.
Of course.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, I just want to remind members that this amendment is brought forward because of I think a rather poor communication from the Three Rivers Park District,
yes,
and some great controversy surrounding this cofferdam. It's brought forward because one of the members, at least of the board, suggested we should just remove the dam and make it into a free-flowing stream. And it's we've been having some discussions about trying to make this go, and this amendment is an effort to promote those discussions. I'm glad the discussions are happening, Mr. Chair. And I think that this amendment maybe has a place set on the floor, but I think given some of the questions that are coming up and the enthusiasm that Three Rivers is here being here tonight, I appreciate that. And I'll be withdrawing the amendment in a moment, Mr. Chair, but I think that would be appropriate now given a few questions that have come up. But the news about the impending sale has not been forthcoming from the Three Rivers Park District. And I have been very disappointed with their ability to communicate with us as a county and the local cities. And I hope that they improve upon that and find themselves not in this situation again. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler withdraws his amendment. Are there any other amendments? Okay, Representative Clark has the A44 amendment. Representative Clark.
Really good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The A44 amendment.
Okay. This is an amendment that would ask that the Pollution and Control Agency come back and report to us on their ideas about and the feasibility of establishing what we're calling a central clearinghouse, so we could link plastic exposure data to health impacts. And you may recall I had actually a bill, and I talked with Representative Osmond about this originally, that talked about environmental justice mapping. I found out in talking with the agency and some of the folks who are in that particular department that those federal dollars are not available, but there are related federal dollars available in an area called environmental public health tracking. And Minnesota is not getting any of those funds. I had an intern do some research for me, and I found 15 states, including Wisconsin is the nearest, Illinois, Massachusetts, others around who are helping us understand what the connections are and bringing the information from, actually, and this is four different agencies. It's the Pollution Control Agency, the Department of Public Health with their health data, the Department of Agriculture, and DEED. I think I've got them all now. That would be sharing their information on exposure sites and health impacts so we can discover what connections there might be. Mr. Chairman, one of the reasons I feel so passionately about this, and I've been trying to pursue this whole issue for throughout this whole session, is in my own neighborhood, we have, in Phillips' neighborhood in South Minneapolis, we discovered in the last year and a half that we have an agricultural pesticide throughout our whole community. It's called arsenic, and it was from a agricultural pesticide plant that was located actually just a few blocks from my house. And I can tell you my own property, in about 3 weeks they're going to take 6 to 12 inches off the front lawn, and then they're trying to decide if they want to do it to the back lawn because there's too much arsenic for us to live safely with. And they tell us that we have to wear masks if we mow our lawns or rake our leaves. So I've been trying very hard to get the Department of Health, the Pollution Control Agency, the Department of Ag. Actually, the Department of Ag has responsibility for this particular problem because it is an agricultural pesticide that was used along the railroad tracks and for weeds and for grasshoppers, I guess. but nobody's really putting their data together. And so to try to get resources, people have to understand what the connections are. And I thought this would be a first step. So this is not a mandate to actually do the correlations. It's a requirement for them to tell us what they would need to do the correlations. So it's first step this session. And then I hope we could come back and hear from them. Can they do this? Is it feasible to put this information together? And so it will help us understand, you know, what's happened in many different parts of our state. I'm speaking personally, I guess, from a personal experience, because we've had like 30 years of exposure to people who lived in this neighborhood. I've lived there more than 20 years myself. What are the impacts? We don't know. If these agencies would talk with each other and use the federal dollars that are available, I think we'd know a lot more and we'd be able to, you know, take care of ourselves. So I just want to run down the states that actually have applied for and already received these public health tracking funds that Minnesota has never applied for. Wisconsin, California, New York, Washington State, Missouri, Massachusetts, Illinois, Montana, Nevada, Maine, Utah, Pennsylvania, Oregon, Washington, D.C., New York City, New Mexico, New Hampshire, Maryland, Florida, and Louisiana. So all those states have actually applied for this money, and Minnesota hasn't. And I think it's about time we did start to put this information together. And I had an intern do the research to help me come up with this information. I think the agency probably could, if there was any cost. I just talked to them a little while ago about, you know, what they would think about this, and they don't know if there would be any cost. I think it would be very helpful to have, you know, some people within the agency, but also interns and others who could help. Just come back and tell us, how do we get these resources from Minnesota, and what should the agencies ask of the legislature in the next session. So that's what this amendment is for.
Representative Clark, just out of curiosity, do you have any kind of a fiscal note on this? I'm certainly not going to raise a point of order or anything like that, but it looks like this is something that could be fairly costly. Do you have any idea how much this would cost?
Well, no. Mr. Chairman, I'm not asking them to do the clearinghouse. I'm just asking them to talk with each other, as these four agencies. They probably would have to hold several meetings.
Okay.
And then come back and make a recommendation to us about how we would go forward with this.
All right.
So I'm not asking them to do it. It's just to tell us what would be the next step in going forward.
Okay.
So I don't know what the fiscal cost would be, and maybe you want to ask them. We just talked about it just recently. I just got this put together because it is an alternative to a bill that I've had in for a while but didn't get a hearing on. So it's a very, I'd say, a very humble first step.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Clark is... In fact, I went to one of her meetings here in the state office building with her neighbors, and it's a very serious concern to them, as well as it is Representative Clark. And tonight she came to my office, and we called the Department of Ag, and the person we wanted to talk to wasn't there. I talked to Mr. Bezicki, and Ag is the first agency that has purview over this. And Mr. Bezicki said that so far the governor has gotten this site in the Superfund list, and the Ag Department is waiting for the EPA to finish with the cleanup. Now, Representative Clark claims that there's no money to be used from the federal government. Last I heard, they own the printing press yet, but you never know. I certainly share her concerns for her safety as well as her neighbor's safety. I don't know what and if this thing costs anything, but I do know that we aren't doing nothing about it. They are doing something, and I certainly have that same concerns for your immediate safety. I don't think I'd want to be wallowing around in arsenic either. So with that, I'd like to find out from the department if there is a fiscal cost to this.
Representative Clark.
I just want to say this has been designated the actual site where the arsenic was designated a national Superfund priority recently. But the problem is, and I've had many conversations just last week again with EPA folks who are in our neighborhood, they claim they can't test every yard. They happen to be doing some of our yards, but they're not even testing every yard. So they clean my yard up in a couple weeks. The next door neighbor's yard, which is a lot of grass missing, happens a lot in the inner city, blows around, and pretty soon, you know, we have it all over again in our yard again. So what I've asked them to do is please test every yard, and they say they can't do that. We've talked to the National Association, the Agency for Toxic Release, Agency for Toxic Substance Disease Registry, asking them if they would do, and they're associated with the EPA. This is EPA dollars, not public health dollars at the ATSCR. And they say, well, we can't really send you money figuring out if you have any health impacts because we don't know if you have any health impacts. And until you know if you have some, we can't send people out to try to find out if you do have some. I mean, it's just a circular argument that the federal government is doing with us. So we do have some money. We do have some money to clean up. They're going to clean up some yards, but it's only a few. I think there's 30-some yards out of the thousands of people who live in this community. And I just think, again, this doesn't solve that problem, but it begins to look at, not, it goes way beyond a little neighborhood, or actually a fairly large neighborhood, 17,000 people. It goes beyond that to all of our state. This is a statewide thing, asking that we try to understand when one agency knows something about toxic exposure, another agency knows something about health, let's put that data together and try to see if we can't get federal dollars to help us clean it up.
Other discussion to the Clark Amendment. Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, just a point, and I don't know if this is going to go on or not, but I have a feeling I'll be giving the same speech a number of times. I think that it would be helpful to have the Information Policy Analysis Division involved, given what we've seen with databases in the past. They have the expertise as far as what can be made available if it's specific. They govern the data laws for the state of Minnesota, and they would be very helpful. And number one, what is able to be done under current law, and if there would be changes needed to law in order to facilitate this type of analysis.
Are they in planning? In planning?
They're a division of the Department of Administration.
Thank you. Good.
Any other discussion?
Is this from you?
See no other discussion. All in favor?
Mr. Chair, I think we have a witness at the table.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Well, there was a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I missed it. One was talking to me. All right. Excuse me. Please give us your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, Kristen Applegate from the Pollution Control Agency. The question was asked if we knew if there was a fiscal impact to doing the feasibility study, and as Representative Clark mentioned, we just saw this language a few minutes ago, and so without having done a fiscal note, we really can't speak to the actual cost. We would need to work with the Department of Agriculture, with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and with the Department of Health, and then put together a fiscal note, and we could give the committee better information at a later time, but we just don't have that at this point. I think the only concern that we would have is that we are looking at reductions within our administrative budget, and so that's why we would want to complete a fiscal note, but we also understand Representative Clark's goal and as it relates to the federal funds, and so our only comment would be that a fiscal note might be appropriate.
Any other discussion? Seeing no other discussion, all in favor of the Clark A44 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members.
Let's see. Next we have Representative Kelleher. You had an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The A26 amendment.
Representative Kelleher moves the A26 amendment. Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been sitting here miserably through this night as well as last night, and how I feel to do this amendment for Representative Kahn, because I said I would. And so
it doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement, Representative Kelleher.
No, Mr. Chairman, it speaks more to my commitment to my colleagues than to the amendment at this point in terms of what I said I would do. I actually do remember when we did this in 2003, we did an appropriation for the Whitewater Recreation Park on the Mississippi River, and I think that the necessity of this language is to extend out a little further. There has been planning work going on this. The money comes out of the water recreation account, out of DNR, and that seems like an appropriate place for this type of expenditure, since overall that money is dedicated to water recreation. This is a type of water recreation that many Minnesotans participate in, and so I'm hoping that members can support Representative Kahn's amendment via me tonight. I know she's talked to many of you about this amendment, to keep the project alive.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a particular problem voting for this, but I, you know, I'm voting for the bill. I've looked at, as I do every year, at the environment bill and find probably about 20 provisions spending millions of dollars for DFLers in the bill who all tend to vote against the bill. And I'm kind of wondering why I, who get nothing and ask for nothing, get to vote for a bill that has all these horrible things that Representative Rukavina and Representative Huntley were talking about before. I mean, what's the purpose of me voting for this bill? We keep loading it up with DFL provisions, and then they all vote against the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, we'll go back in history a little bit. One of your members taught us very well. He says, well, I like my project in the bill, but I didn't like anything else in it, so that's why I voted against it. I'll get you the tape for it if you want.
But Representative Silver, the thing is, I don't have anything in the bill, and it's just kind of like I get to carry everybody else's water all the time. So just, I'll have a little more commentary later, Mr. Chairman, on some of the particulars in the bill. You know, I talked to Representative Kahn on the floor. I don't have any particular objections to this. I remember this was some big hoo-ha about, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, and it seems like a neat enough project, actually, but... you know, I don't. I asked Representative Connors if she's going to vote for the bill, and she said she would think about it. So,
Representative Anderson,
vote for it.
We're going to appropriate $700,000 to enlarge a whitewater park when we are laying off 30,000 hardworking people from MinCare.
Well, Representative Anderson, I remember the debate on the floor on this a few years ago, and you know, I guess people can. And we'll do whatever they want tonight. But I guess to me, to take $700,000 or whatever it is, $700,000 out of the water recreation account, which would normally go to fishing piers and boat ramps around Minnesota, and to put it into a whitewater park in downtown Minneapolis, I guess was something that I had opposed on the floor a few years ago, and I guess I plan to oppose now.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Kelleher.
I just think we need to be really clear here. There are thousands of Minnesotans that own kayaks and do whitewater recreation. They deserve, because they pay into the water recreation fees when they register their boats as well, a place to do this activity. And Representative Seifert, I appreciate your comments. I feel like I'm carrying Representative Kahn's water tonight. I certainly hope this doesn't obligate me in any way to this bill. So, Representative Rukavina tells me I'm carrying her white water tonight. So, I appreciate the point, but I think we have to remember kayaking is a growing sport in this state and region, and this is something that these folks pay into as well. I appreciate that fishing piers and boat ramps can happen as well. Right now the fund has, I believe, about $20 million in it. It'll have a carry forward after the current biennium still of another $2.5 million, and that refreshes fairly quickly, I believe, every year. So,
Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to vote for this piece of legislation. I think it's a something that's needed for the city of Minneapolis. I'll not be one that'll be using the facilities or whatever, but I am a person that I think we do in some instances, members. We have an obligation to help the entire state of Minnesota. And this is one of those issues, and I think it's well worth the money that it be spent for it, and so I'll be voting yes on the issue.
See, no further discussion. All in favor of the Kelleher Amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion prevails. The Kelleher Amendment is adopted. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After much discussion on this rather large A39 amendment, we're going to leave it just the way it is and confirm that the must does not lock the department in prior to it getting to the floor, and if it's a problem, we'll just remove it there.
Okay, Representative McNamara moves the A39 amendment. dealing with Minnesota-grown planting stock that was discussed before. Discussion to the amendment. See no discussion. All in favor of the A39 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A39 amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I don't have an amendment, and hopefully we can go to third reading here quickly, but I just wanted, as I do annually on the environment bill, is give a brief list of things that are in the bill that the list of things for me is rather brief because I don't have anything, nor did I ask for anything, but I want to let members and the public know that there are some things in here for members that may be of interest of question why people vote no on things that include particular items for their districts. I'm just going to run through real quickly some items in here, including $261,000 for the Lake Superior Safe Harbor, $50,000 for the North Shore Trail, $264,000 for Como and Duluth Zoos, Representative Paymar, Representative Mariani, Representative Huntley, $15,000 for Mauer County Pond, $250,000 for Aitken Land Improvement, $500,000 for Gitchigami Trail, $400,000 for the Paul Bunyan Trail in Bemidji, $1 million for the Mesabi Trail, $83,000 for the Arrowhead Trail, $350,000 for Roseville and Falcon Heights, Thatch Roof for Green Roof Projects for Representative Greiling, $175,000 for Blue Heron Research Vessel, $200,000 for Minneapolis Bassett Creek Channel Restoration, $376,000 for Cloquet, $350,000 for turning potato waste into polymers for Bemidji State, $240,000 for UMD study, $466,000 for the always prevalent Laurentian Energy Project, Representative Rukavina, $75,000 for solving environmental problems in Twin Cities schools, $95,000 for the Tamarack Center in Ramsey County, and my eyes became too tired to go beyond that. So, Mr. Chairman, for everybody who keeps saying we don't get anything in these bills and how horrible these bills are, if this bill goes down on the floor with 66 yes votes and 69 no's or whatever it is, perhaps we need to take all these projects out and put them into districts for people who are voting yes on these bills, and potentially we'll get 68 votes for this bill on passage. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Swilbert.
Chair, I can't let that go by, because if you're worried about passing the bill, maybe we should have started some earlier negotiations with on a bipartisan basis. But Representative Seifert, I'll take you to quote after quote when we were in the majority. In fact, as a speaker would make amendments to a bill, he'd pass them and he'd vote against them. So don't put that on us, because that doesn't sell.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Speaker, I'm one of the few people on this side of the aisle that actually served in the minority, and I remember getting a $50,000 fund transfer, which didn't cost anybody anything except my own district, and was told by the chair of K-12, we expect that you will be voting for the K-12 bill for that $50,000 internal fund transfer. So for this list of millions of dollars, I think is bipartisan. I don't know how more bipartisan you can get, because what I'm reading in this bill, a majority of the specific projects in this bill are DFL projects. How much more bipartisan can you get? I don't see any. We always hear about Edina, Representative Earhart, getting everything.
No, I'm not getting anything.
I mean,
getting involved, yeah.
So we keep hearing that everybody on this side of the table, Representative Abrams, Representative Smith, I'm sure you guys have all sorts of things in this bill, and I'm asking that very rhetorically. I don't think you have anything in the bill. So, you know, I don't know what negotiations were supposed to take place, because when in reading this bill, a huge majority of the specific projects are all DFL projects. And then we hear in the hallway, well, they don't really want to vote for the bill. So I think the bill's going to pass, Mr. Chairman. I just think that by keep doing this year after year and handing projects out with everybody being able to vote no, I want to put it on the record that they are in the bill, that they are in these districts, that we don't just go blindly out of here saying we're not being bipartisan, because Representative Osmond put an enormous amount of DFL projects in this bill. And Representative Osmond, I will say thank you on behalf of the members who have all these projects, but
at least people know there are some things in this bill, I think, that are bipartisan. I don't want to scold you and say shame on you for voting no, blah, blah, blah. But I just want to say at least Representative Osmond is trying to be bipartisan. If he really wanted to be hackish and so forth, he would have taken every one of these projects and he would have put them into Republican districts. So, you know, Representative Osmond, I think you did the best with the money that you had. I still plan on voting for the bill. I think it'll pass. Just so members of the public know, there are a lot of projects in this bill for DFLers.
Yeah. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I may be wrong about this, Representative Seifert, but I was trying to add real quickly, and it's somewhere between, I think, 72% and 73%. Of the projects are north of Highway 2. That's the only thing that bothers me.
Mr. Chairman, my district is not enough north of Highway 2. That's a problem.
Representative Riley.
Afterwards, I'd like to find out what thatched roof I'm getting in Roseville.
pages 29 and 30, lines 55 to 63 and 1 through 6.
I think it's your house, Representative Riley. Representative Larson, to that point, do you know where the thatched roof is?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, quite honestly, Representative Seifert, I was planning on joining you to vote for it until you read the list, but now I got to vote no.
Representative Dorn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I just want to thank Representative Dempsey earlier for pointing out how a project that is on the Mississippi River that is a park is something that is a statewide facility, and I certainly want to thank Representative Seifert over the years for calling our attention to the importance of the statewide significance of Southwest State University, which happens to be located in his district, but certainly is a state facility. And I'd also like to thank all the members over the years for their consideration for the state facilities, the Minneopa Park or the Minnesota State University Mankato, that I've always argued happens to be a state facility. It's located in my district. I have the honor of bringing forward the issues on behalf of the state for that facility. And I would hope we would remember that a lot of the things we're talking about here are not partisan, and they do serve all of the people of Minnesota.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, my title is state representative. It's not representative from Duluth. And while this bill does give $260,000 to the Duluth Zoo, it takes $2.5 million away from the University of Minnesota Permanent University Fund, which will have a long, forever impact on the ability of the university to develop and the ability of it to offer scholarships to its students to make up for the 62% increase in tuition that we've had in the last 4 years.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate the conversation because it's. I think it does point out the fact that we have not focused on partisan issues in putting together the bill. We have really tried to put together issues that impact on the best benefit and best welfare of the entire state of Minnesota. And that's how I believe the committee has approached this issue. It certainly is the way I've approached it. There's no one that has been asked to saying that we're putting something into this bill that they need to vote for the bill in order to get it in there or to keep it in there. I did jokingly talk about Representative Rukavina and let him know he had something in the bill, but I've never twisted his arm to vote for it. I believe that bills need to be brought forward based upon their merit. This bill is not as rich as I would like to see it. I certainly would like to see more dollars go towards the environment. I think it's time that we all try to join together and make sure that we provide additional revenues for the benefit of the state of Minnesota so that we can go with the plan B that's in this proposal. And with that and your support, we can all try and make Minnesota as best possible, but we don't do it from a partisan basis. We do it for the best benefit and best welfare of the state of Minnesota. And I appreciate all your input and all your advice in helping us get this quality product. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Osmond, I would personally like to thank you for the statesmanlike approach you took in putting this bill together. I'd like to tell members a little story. In 1991, I had a small local issue in the tax bill that former Representative Ogren put in the bill in the tax committee, and the bill passed out of the tax committee on a partisan vote with all the DFLers voting in favor of it, all the Republicans voting against. We had budget problems like we had today. We got to the floor in the first author's amendment. We didn't have a Ways and Means process then, Representative Colbert. Was by Representative Ogren, and he took out every Republican provision in the 1991 tax bill, and he said that if you didn't pay to come to the dance, you're not going to be able to dance. Every Republican provision, including my little provision, was taken out of the bill. I didn't hear any real objections on that side, but the purpose of the story is, I then went over to talk to the Senate tax chair, who I had never met before, Doug Johnson. And I, you know, introduced myself and talked to him for 10, 15 minutes about the provision. He said, don't worry. He said, it'll be in the Senate bill, and I'll get it through conference for you. Well, the purpose of the story is that we have to be working on building relationships and trying to do the best we can for the state of Minnesota. I've been in those chairs on the other side. I was there for 10 years, and I know how small I felt on that day in 1991. When we had 53 votes and there was nothing I can do when a chair acted in an arbitrary fashion. And I'm glad that we have chairs like Dennis Osmond, who served longer in the minority than I did, who remember those sorts of lessons and understand the difference between the things you have to do on a partisan basis in order to get done an agenda, but also understand that the word state is before the word representative and acts in that sort of fashion, putting together a bill. So, Representative Osmond, as much as I don't like your ATV provision in the bill, I look forward to voting for Representative Wagenius' amendment on the floor to take it out. I do thank you for a lot of the provisions in the bill that, quite frankly, don't benefit my district. Or don't benefit my district directly, but do benefit my constituents who happen to go all around the state. They go into Minneapolis, they go whitewater rafting, they go up and visit the Duluth Zoo. Gee, Representative Anderson, they even go up to International Falls and go fishing, believe it or not. And Representative Rukavina, they go recreate in your district, and they go to the Iron World, Representative Solberg. Well, although that...
Representative Abrams, I understand where this state is and what faction is there.
My constituents go everywhere, and I'm thankful that Representative Osmond's put together a bill in which we can all be proud to vote for.
Mr. Chairman, just
Representative Solberg. Notice Representative Ogren isn't here. I took him out.
Any other discussion?
I thought the moral of the story was Doug Johnson and your age is a great guy.
Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, since we're doing things for the record, Representative Seifert, I liked you when you were chairing the state government finance bill and putting that bill together because I thought you did it very well. And so I want to say that tonight before I say the next thing, which is I think that list that you read was a list created bipartisanly, multi-body, in the LCMR process. And so we had a little discussion about that earlier, about the flaws in that process, and there probably are a few flaws in the process. But the thing that always makes this bill a lot stronger is that the chairs, Representative Osmond, Representative Holston before you when I've been here, that you have usually honored that process and tried to live by that process, which I think makes it always a better bill. And I just want to be clear that if we're going to talk about how that list came about and what makes it so strong and why it is bipartisan, that we're also clear where that list came from, because it wasn't like people were bought off with goodies around the table or something. So, Representative Seifert, I like you when you're chairing your committee because I think you did a great job, and I hope you'll wear that hat more often.
Any other discussion? See no further discussion. Representative Osmond renews his motion that House File 902, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Representative Solberg, I'm not sure if we're going to meet tomorrow. If we would, it would just be to do some small bills. I would say we will almost certainly...